Blog Talk Radio.
Mode One.
I want to rock with you.
You are now listening to Upfront and Straightforward with Alan Roger Curry.
The following internet radio show is for mature audiences only. That means, boys and girls, you must be 18 years of age or older to listen.
Without question, there are many men and women in society today that find dating and relationships to be, at a minimum, very challenging, and at a maximum, very frustrating. For most of the early to middle portion of the 20th century, many men and women were middle school sweethearts, high school sweethearts, and or college sweethearts, and the various couples remained romantically connected up until the point where they got married. Well, beginning with the latter part of the previous century, and even more so in the current 21st century, men and women's lifestyles have become much more fast-paced, transitory, and even global. Many of us are developing a new social circle of friends and acquaintances every 5 years or so. So the question becomes, what if you find yourself a single person living in a big city such as New York, Los Angeles, Chicago, Philadelphia, Phoenix, or Houston? If you are new to the city, how do you acclimate yourself to the social life in your new metropolis and develop new friends? Let's be more specific. What if you are a single black person who just moved to a new large city? Okay, let's be even more specific. What if you are a college-educated, professional black woman who moves to a city with over 1 million residents and you know nothing about where to go socially, as far as the best venues to find your next boyfriend, your future husband, or just your inner circle of friends of the same gender? What exactly do you do? My guest tonight is an up-and-coming novelist, and her very first novel is based on some of her real-life friendships and experiences, and her story centers on a small group of female friends who take advantage of everything Chicago has to offer during the summertime. Each character in the story has their share of ups and downs and challenges, particularly as it relates to dating and relationships. Who is this woman who knows how to accurately capture the essence of romantically challenged upper middle class women living in a big city such as Chicago? Her name is Deanna Kimberly Burrell, and tonight Miss Burrell is going to enlighten my listening audience on what motivated her to write her novel entitled Single Girl Summer, as well as offer her own tips and insight for any single educated professional sister trying to make her way in a new, exciting, but very large city, as Deanna Kimberly Burrell takes time from her schedule in order to get up front and straightforward with Alan Roger Curry.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Is this Alan Roger Curry of Mode One fame? Oh, my God.
You're really good at this.
I got to ask you, though, do you feel that black men have some type of unwritten obligation to date and marry someone in a race? You do?
I think they do. I think I think white people should date white people. I think black people should date black people.
Now, how did you come up with this idea to go to Italy with the women?
With the women, right. I just got so tired of hearing all my male friends talk about Brazil and how great Brazil is for them.
When I was growing up, I would go and hear about black women complaining about white women are stealing our men. Don't complain about your goods being stolen if you casually leave them on the front porch.
Have sex. Enjoy your life.
You know, men really want women to have standards. They really do. And I don't know how we got off of the mark there, but men do like classy women, and they want women to have standards.
I think you can be single and be very, very happy, and I think it's about taking the pressures off about being married.
I'm not saying that you should disrespect a woman. Never disrespect your woman, but the key is to not let her walk all over you.
Romantic love is very volatile. People don't realize it. And it is a drug. People don't realize it. Men and women do stupid things. Not all men, but sometimes you'll do stuff stupid.
I think it's a turn on, because just to see that person, just to enjoy themselves and just to watch them touching that person and making them feel good, I think that's kind of sexy, actually.
Yo, yo, mode one. This is Gerard McClendon from Chicago tonight and the McClendon Report. Right now you're listening to Upfront and Straightforward with my good friend, Alan Roger Curry. Mode one, let the women know, fellas, what you're really thinking. Ha ha, Alan Roger Curry.
Then next week, I'm going to have a young man by the name of Corey Jenkins. Corey Jenkins is the host of a show called The Mailroom TV. The Mailroom TV. He kind of does like a video. His show's on video and also it's on radio as well. And we're going to be talking about the interesting subject of a man's ego versus a woman's emotion. Man's ego. I always say that both genders are many times influenced by what I call the big E's. For men, the big E is the ego. For women, the big E is the emotions. Now, both genders are influenced to one degree or another by both. Men are emotional, too, and women are egotistical, too. But I think men, if we were to generalize, are more so egotistical than most women are, and women are more so emotional than most men are. Anyway, that's going to be the discussion next week. And then I'm going to wrap up the year by talking about two things. My third paperback, which drops either right before Christmas or in that weekend between Christmas and New Year's, my third paperback is entitled, Ooh, Say It Again. You know, all the women know that's my signature phrase, Ooh, Say It Again. It's called Ooh, Say It Again, Mastering the Fine Art of Verbal Seduction and Oral Sex. Not oral, not O-R-A-L, but A-U-R-A-L sex. And so we're going to be talking about my book, and we're going to be talking about just the general subject of erotic dirty talk. Because, as I say in my book that's coming out, sometimes erotic dirty talk is more controversial than sex itself. And you know, just from listening to the show I talked about 2 or 3 weeks ago, you know, it created controversy with a couple of guests on this show. A woman who wrote that book about, what is it, The Little Black Book or Big Red Flags? Me and her, we went at it. For those that didn't listen to that episode, you have to listen to it. I was talking about sometimes I get contentious with my guests. And me and that particular guest, we went at it for about 5 minutes because she said that no man should ever talk dirty to a woman in the very first conversation. I was like, that's some bullshit. And we went back and forth. And anyway, enough about past episodes, but that's going to be my very last episode of 2011. That's 2 weeks from tonight. Now, you know I got love for all my listeners. All my listeners. A guy who started out with probably about 25 good listeners to my show back in 2007 that's grown now to over 50,000 listeners. But I want to always highlight my chat room listeners. My chat room listeners, they are joining me. I got my listener, Adrian Diva, 362636. See, matter of fact, see, she's in the Big Ten family. My guest tonight is in the Big Ten family. If you don't know what I'm talking about when I say the Big Ten family, I'm a big sports head. And on the college ranks, there's different conferences. The Big Ten includes my alma mater, Indiana University, Adrian's alma mater, Ohio State, who just hired Urban Meyer, who said, Urban Meyer is the Brett Favre of coaching. He's like, man, I'm done. I'm through. I'm not going to coach ever again. Ever again. They was like, hey, Urban, we'll give you a few million. Okay, yeah, fuck what I said before. Yeah, I'm going to come back and coach. Yeah, Ohio State, they beat the shit out of Duke the other night. Man, they beat the shit out of Duke the other night. I hate Duke. Anybody who listens to my show know I hate Duke. I don't like Duke. I mean, nothing personal. Just purely to do with sports. I hate Duke. But anyway, the Big Ten, U of I, University of Illinois, got friends who went there. IU, Northwestern, my guest tonight, Iowa, Michigan, U of Michigan, Michigan State, Purdue, my arch rival. Who else? Who else? Minnesota, Wisconsin. Who else is in the Big Ten? Penn State, Nebraska. I feel like I'm missing somebody. If I'm missing one of the schools in the Big Ten, please excuse me. But I think I covered most of them. Anyway, back in the chat room, I got my younger cousin, Christopher Curry from Detroit Heights Style. I got Lord Lust. I got Queen Classy. I got William Reed. I got Alex, a.k.a. Don Calypso. Alex is, of course, the one with the split personality. If he likes you, he's Alex, a.k.a. the Haitian Sensation. If he don't like you, he's Alan, a.k.a. the Haitian Abomination. And he's one of my most loyal listeners. I got Aaron 2213, another loyal listener. I got some guests in my chat room, and I got some people listening on my phone queue. So I welcome any new listener I may have. Other shout-outs will be my older brother and ace confidant, Stephen Curry, J.P. Jones, my cousin in Chicago, his sister, Kimberly Jones Snipe in Atlanta. Yep, she's from the Big Ten, University of Illinois. That's right. Philip Pulliam and his older brother, Irvin Z. Pulliam, the third, EVP3. Vanessa Turner, Paulina Long, Shundice, John McClendon, my frat, Tantrum, much love. My Sands, Jeff Kent, Roxana Harlow, Northwestern, Nasser Metcalf, Kenwood Academy, Morehouse, Yanni Brown, she's one of the six brown chicks on WCIU, just like my guest. We'll talk about that once I get into the interview, along with Gina Barge. That's right, Gina Barge is one of the six brown chicks. Shoya, Zandra, Dr. Dawes. Y'all check out, if you're in the Chicago area, the six brown chicks on WCIU. They talk about stuff. They got under my skin the other week talking about, can you train a bad boy? That's... don't get me started on that one. But anyway, those shouts, of course, my female supporters on Facebook. I got a member of my female supporters group. I love her. I love her to death. She kind of tripped me out. She said, Alan, can you change the name from female supporters to women supporters? Because I feel like female, the term female doesn't give us our humanity. You know how sometimes you just can get too deep for your own good? That's one of them instances where you're just getting too deep for your own good. Because I use male, female, man, woman all the time. Just interchangeably. There's no big profound, I mean, what the fuck are you talking about? Just female supporters of Alan Roger Curry. Ashton Kutcher, Demi Moore, I heard they done. But then I heard they're not done. I don't know what's going on with them. The brother defensive lineman for the Detroit Lions, he got suspended for 2 games. You know, it kills me when brothers say, they say, hey, I didn't do it. Whatever they said I did, I didn't do it. Then you watch the video, and they did exactly what they said they didn't do. He said, man, I did not stomp on that guy. Then you see the video. He's stomping the shit out that guy when you're on the ground. He got suspended. Forget Detroit. Forget Green Bay. I'm all about the Bears. Stuff just keeps coming out about Sandusky with Penn State. That's just sad. Taking advantage of boys like that. I talked about that the other week. I don't even want to talk about that. It just pisses me off, man. Then Conrad Murray, he got 4 years. Now, you know, everybody know who's a regularist of mine. You know how much I love Michael Jackson. You lucky I wasn't a judge, because I want to give that brother about, like, I want to give him, like, 500 years for fucking with the King of Pop from my hometown. I want to give him, like, they would have been like, Judge Curry, what's wrong? Why are you giving him I want to give that motherfucker 500 years. But he got 4 years, whatever. Herman Cain, you remember that video with Vince Carter in the 2000 NBA slam dunk? He just, like, dunked it and the crowd went crazy. And then he made this gesture where he just went, like, it's over. Like, this contest is over. For some reason, I thought of that video when I read about Herman Cain. It's over. He came out today saying his wife didn't know he had this friendship with Ginger. Bruh. It's over. It is done. Cooked, done. It's just over. It's over. His run, it was a nice run. But, well, I'm not going to even lie. It wasn't a nice run. It was an interesting run. But it's over. It's over. Sorry, Herman. Take care. Go eat some pizza. It's done. It might be even done in his personal life. I think it's done. And finally, before I go to my intermission break, there's some stuff that's just been disturbing me. You know, I have a very empathetic side. And I've been reading stuff that's been disturbing. First, I read this article, and it was on the news, about this woman who had a combination of super glue, fix a tire flat, tire sealant, mineral oil, and cement injected to make her butt bigger. What is going on, man? I mean, seriously. What's going on? I mean, I know every man wants to have an athletic physique. Women want to have a nice, shapely figure. But come on. Do not go to somebody who does not have degrees and certificates all over their wall. I'm not letting no one touch anything on my body unless I know they are certified and get, like I said, multiple certificates, license, whatever. Man, that just disgusted me. I felt sorry for him on one end, and on the other end, I just want to just slap him for being that stupid. Then in Afghanistan, you got a guy who wanted to marry some guy's teenage daughter. His father said no. He came back and poured acid on her face and the sister's face. Man, you talk about just stuff like that just brings out my, if only momentarily, it brings out my dark side. And I just want to just slap somebody. At minimum, I just want to just slap somebody. And a woman over there, she went to prison because she got raped. They considered that adultery. She got raped, but she's in prison. Now they say she's in prison for her own safety. But man, this is the world we live in. This is the world we live in. I can't cover every issue. I can only concentrate on dating and relationships. And when I get back from this commercial break, we will get right into my interview with my guest. And I'm telling you, I'm going to be throwing some questions at her. You know me, I'm going to throw some questions based on her book and just life as a single person. So get hyped. Don't go anywhere. I will be right back.
Can you feel the tension? You know what's coming up next, don't you? You all know what's coming up next. So what can I tell you? I'm excited. I'm standing backstage and I'm all jittery. It's the moment we've all been waiting for. What can I tell you? I read this guy's book about 2 years ago, and this is some of the most powerful shit I've read. The guy's mind-blowing. He's got a radio show. He's been all over the place. He's got crazy fans. He's amazing at what he does. He loves helping people as well. This guy will go on for hours and hours, even if it's like one person or 100 people. He doesn't give a shit. He'll stand there and he'll help people and help them and help them and just keep it. And he loves this stuff. He's passionate about it. He changed my life. He's changing everybody's life in the room and thousands of people, and he's amazing. I'm really happy. I consider him one of my mentors. I love the guy. Please go crazy for Alan Roger Curry.
And I need to know what you said to the Japanese girl on roller skates.
I went up to her. I said, you got a talent for this rollerblading thing. And that was probably the only moment when she was smiling. She was like, yes, I love to rollerblade. I said, well, to be quite frank with you, I ain't give a fuck about rollerblading. I said, your ass looks so juicy in that, what is that, spandex? And she was like, oh, my God, I mean, would you just come to Venice Beach to just look at women's asses? I was like, is that a trick question?
Please visit www.mode1.net for more information on the Direct Approach Dating Summit 2010 DVD. Are you an expert and/or book author who offers men and women products and services related to dating and relationships? If you have a new product, a valuable service, or upcoming event or speaking presentation that you would like to advertise on the Blog Talk Radio Internet Radio Network that is guaranteed to hit your target demographic audience, then look no further than Blog Talk Radio's number one talk radio podcast program for active dating singles. Upfront and Straightforward with Alan Roger Curry has had more episodes ranked number one in the category of romance, dating and relationships, love and sex, and overall self-help for singles than any other talk radio podcast program on the entire Blog Talk Radio network since January of 2008. I will help you advertise any product, service, or event that is designed to help men and women improve their love lives, sex lives, and overall social lives. Please write me at Blog Talk Radio Advertising at mode1.net. That's MODEONE.net. Don't wait. Do it now.
Single, lonely, confused, join me. I invite you to listen to the most informative and entertaining talk radio show on the internet for single men and single women looking to enhance their social lives, love lives, and or sex lives. Get on the phone right now and tell one or two of your single friends to listen to Upfront and Straightforward with yours truly, Alan Roger Curry, Thursday evenings at 10 p.m. Eastern, 9 p.m. Central, and 7 p.m. on the West Coast, right here on the Blog Talk Radio Internet Radio Network. We're now now return to Upfront and Straightforward with Alan Roger Curry, right here on the Blog Talk Radio Internet Radio Network. Welcome back to tonight's episode of Upfront and Straightforward with Alan Roger Curry. Real quick, before I introduce my guest, one of my loyal listeners, Terry, who graduated from the University of Michigan, she said when I was naming all the Big Ten schools, which is really 12 schools, I mean, they still call it the Big Ten, but it's 12 schools. She said I left out Iowa. I thought I said Iowa, but just in case I didn't, you know, I got people who went to Iowa. So, again, the Big Ten, Michigan State, Michigan, Nebraska, Iowa, Northwestern, Minnesota, Wisconsin, Penn State, Purdue, Ohio State, University of Illinois, and my alma mater, IU, Indiana University. Anyway, my guest tonight grew up in Chicago, where she attended the prestigious Whitney M. Young Magnet School. That's if you're not familiar with Chicago, that's like the school to be in. I mean, they get like 10,000 applications for about 450 to 500 slots every year. So if you went to Whitney Young and you graduated from there, yeah, you got some juice behind you. And later she graduated from Northwestern University in Evanston, Illinois, where she majored in radio, film, and television studies. She currently lives in Chicago. And as I mentioned, she's a member of the all-female team of bloggers on WCIU, known as the Six Brown Chicks. I've watched a few of the video episodes. Very, very entertaining. They all add their own unique and entertaining brand of advice and wisdom, primarily related, like my show, to dating and relationships issues for all viewers in the Chicago area. Her first book was entitled Voted Most Creative: Perspectives on Life, Love, and the Pursuit of Happiness. And her second book is her first novel, and it is entitled Single Girl Summer, which emphasizes balanced perspectives into how real friendships, romances, and families work. Sometimes they unravel, sometimes they thrive, sometimes they unravel in order to thrive. I like that. My guest tonight says the only constant in life is change, and for every girl, there's a season. On behalf of the Blog Talk Radio, Internet Radio Network, and Upfront and Straightforward, listeners, give it up for tonight's guest, Miss Deanna Kimberly Burrell.
Hi, everyone.
Oh, look.
I'm honored.
You're welcome.
I'm honored to be here. Is this the Alan Roger Curry?
The Alan Roger Curry. Now, speaking of the Alan Roger Curry, somebody wrote in my, and I know who this is, my good friend, she wrote in the chat room, it's not Ohio State, it is the Ohio State University.
Oh, yeah,
University.
It's the Ohio State, yeah. They're very particular about that.
Yeah. So, Miss Burrell, you and Dawn and Megan and Button.
My girls.
Man, boy, y'all something else. You are something. Now, I'm just going to come out with, well, first let me get some background information from you. What made you, at what point in your life, whether it was your eighth grade year, senior in high school, junior in college, what made you say, I want to take up writing? I want to not only write, but I want to write for the general public to read. I want to publish a book. When did that happen?
It honestly is it was kind of a hobby. I've always been a good writer. I've always enjoyed writing and, you know, received accolades from teachers and peers. Oh, you're such a good writer. And I was like, oh, okay. I just never thought anything of it. But 3 years ago, I was like, man, I need an outlet for my creative energy, and I decided to write a book. So I wrote my first book called Voted Most Creative, because when I was in college, I was voted most creative. And it's a collection of poems and essays to help you be more inspired and to encourage self-growth and exploration and creativity. So I put together some poems and some essays, and, you know, I did it in about maybe 4 months or so.
Okay.
And I self-published it, and, you know, people really enjoyed it. They said it, you know, it touched them, and it helped them to, just like I was doing, just get in touch with their creative side. So then I was like, man, I should write something more substantive. And then I decided to write this fiction book, and that's a whole another animal. Writing poems and essays, they don't all have to go together, so you can just do one and it stands alone and tweak it. Writing a fiction book, it was a labor of love because it takes a lot of effort and energy and mind power. But I enjoyed it. I loved it.
Yeah, because
the response.
Because as you know, I'm a writer myself, and the only attempts at fiction I've ever written is when I lived in L.A. I was pursuing a career as a screenwriter, and writing a fictional screenplay is much different than writing a novel. I don't know if I would ever be motivated to undertake that endeavor. And so
I don't know. I see that in your future.
Oh, do you now? Okay.
Yeah, I do. You're
all right, Miss Prognosticator.
You dabble now, in different things.
Now, do you feel any this is going to be an interesting question. Do you feel any sisterhood with Niecy Nash or Dakota Fanning?
Why?
You familiar with both of those, Niecy Nash and Dakota Fanning?
Yeah. Actually, Niecy has really good blogs, like dating and relationship blogs.
Does she really?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Uh-huh. I was just watching some. But Dakota?
She's like, Dakota? Where Dakota? The reason why I asked you that is because, and I'm even indirectly related to this question, because you and I are both of the Pisces mindset. I'm March 3rd. Niecy Nash is February 23rd. Dakota Fanning is February 23rd. And I think the woman I'm talking to is February 23rd.
I am, yes.
Okay.
Me and W.E.B. Du Bois.
Niecy
and Dakota.
Okay. All right.
I love astrology. I love Pisces. Yanni, one of my fellow Six Brown chicks, she's also a Pisces. And so she and I, we've like bonded instantly. And when she told me it was because we're both Pisces, I was like, yeah, that's it.
Well, it's funny. You should know something about Yanni as it relates to me and my show. Yeah, I guess you don't. But real quick, she's in that category of she's a two-time guest on my show.
Oh, did it get heated?
No, actually, we had a great conversation. Matter of fact, one of our interviews was actually around this time. It was December, I want to say it was December 2008. Which is, I think, our first interview centered on her organization, Intimate Evenings.
Uh-huh.
And we just talked about nice things that couples, both married and just romantic couples, could do to spice up. Now, that's not my norm. I know if you heard me talking in the early part, you might think that's my norm.
And you warned me. You kept warning me, like, I just want you to know.
No, I would say at minimum, probably 75 to 80% of my shows is that the interviews and discussions are very friendly, very amicable. But I would say maybe one out of six shows. Here's the thing that usually, and I tell different listeners and guests, is this is what sets me off. One, if you come on my show and you've promoted yourself as having, say, expertise in one area, but I can instantly tell that you really don't, I'm the type of host that I'm going to call you out on it.
You're going to go in on that, huh?
Oh, yeah. Secondly, when I hear, like, within the course of an interview, if I hear blatant contradiction, which a few of my guests do.
Correction.
And
if it's a full moon and the crazy get out.
But, yeah, I've had some, and particularly this year, I want to arguably say I've had more contentious interviews in the year 2011 than any other calendar year since I started doing the show. But I don't always start it now. I'm not always the instigator. But yeah, the very last one, a woman, she came on and she wrote this book. And in her book, see, you have to know me, Deanna. I have a thing for talking dirty. That's kind of almost like my MO. And say it again.
Say it again.
So she had written in her book, it was actually authored by her and two of her friends. And there's a section in her book where it says, if a man talks dirty to you, particularly in the first conversation, that means he's a selfish lover. And I started off lightheartedly challenging that. I was like, that's some bullshit.
And you were taking that personal, weren't you?
And But I was initially, if you listen to any, I started off being very lighthearted. She was the one that kind of got serious. She was, you know, she started being very prudish, like, Ellen, I think it's disgusting if you talk dirty to a woman and you don't know her. And I would venture to say that 99% of women in society don't like that. And I was like, where is that statistic coming from? That's bullshit.
The fake statistic.
Just making up your own statistic. But anyway, we'll see how this one goes. My prediction is that I don't think we're going to have those moments, but we might.
We might.
I might
there
ask you something that you have an adverse reaction to. Now, I'm going to ask you a very simple question. What do you love? For those people who have never lived in Chicago, never extensively visited Chicago, give me just a few of your thoughts of why you love the city of Chicago, and particularly. And it's funny, I just had a woman I know who lived, she's not from Chicago, but she lived in Chicago for the last few years. She just moved to L.A., though, because of a job. And she made the comment. She said, I miss Chicago, but more specifically, I definitely miss Chi-Town in the summertime. And a lot of people make that comment. So if you were talking to somebody, Deanna, who's ignorant to the essence of Chicago, particularly in the summertime, tell my listeners why they would enjoy Chicago in the summertime.
Chicago in the summer is the best place ever. Well, first of all, right now it's getting cold. I think it's snowing a little bit. And we're in the cold. We're cooped up. We're frozen for 9 months. So by the time the summer comes, like, people just kind of just let loose and just go crazy and just really do the most because you know that the cold's coming again. So there's so much to do. Everyone knows Chicago has great restaurants, and then in the summer you can just sit outside and get some sun and eat, you know, on a patio, have some drinks with your friends. And then Chicago, the city of Chicago, they do lots of free events too. So you have all these festivals. You've got all these different neighborhoods and cultures, and everyone showcasing what's great about their neighborhood and what's great about their ethnicity. So you've got, you know, the German Fest. You've got the Randolph Street restaurants where you can go and sample all these different restaurants. You've got Taste of Chicago. You've got huge events. You've got small events. There's just literally something for everyone. There's something going on at every moment. It is such a great place to be in the summer. So, another great thing about Chicago is the people. You know, from Gary, it's that Midwestern, heartfelt, friendly, warm, happy, inclusive kind of vibe. You know, it's totally different when you go to New York when everyone's ignoring. Someone could be stabbed in the street and everyone just ignores what's going on. But in the Midwest, it's friendly, you know. So you've got that, and when you add the summer on top of it, it's unbeatable.
I would agree with that assessment. Now, I got a quick question, a favor to ask you. Are you on a mobile phone?
I am.
Okay. If I can ask you, and this is going to probably be challenging because this interview is not going to be the shortest interview in the world, but if I can ask you not to move too much or maybe during one of the intermission breaks to call back in on landline, because there was a moment when you were talking where your voice, the volume kind of faded.
Okay.
And that's what let me know you're on a mobile. So I'm assuming that when you move, it affects the quality of the reception. But now, I mentioned earlier that if your book was to be made into a movie, there might be comparisons made to both Sex and the City and Waiting to Exhale. Do you feel, well, first let me ask you, I'm certain you probably watched both Waiting to Exhale, the movie, as well as the series and the movies for Sex and the City.
Yes.
What did you like about both as far as how they, you know, captured the friendship, camaraderie between the women? And if anything, what was there something that you might have disliked about either one?
I loved Waiting to Exhale because it was one of the first movies that was an ensemble African-American female cast. So that was just so wonderful to see. And then you and your girlfriends get together, go to the movies and see women that look like you and that are having some of the same relationships and dating challenges that you're having. So that was just awesome. And then the soundtrack to the movie, too, was awesome.
Yes, and we know Deanna's into soundtrack.
I love music.
Good choices, by the way. I liked all the songs you selected.
Thank you. In the back of the book, there's a soundtrack for the each character has their soundtrack. What I didn't like about Waiting to Exhale, I didn't like the way some of the women were portrayed. I feel like a lot of times they just seemed really weak and that they just made just really dumb decisions, and it didn't round out at the end. But that's kind of how the book was, to be honest.
Ooh, see, now you see already you've said something that's got me rubbing my hands together, ready to pounce on it. But I'll let you continue with Sex and the City. What are your likes and dislikes?
Again, it was that that ensemble female cast, because we hadn't had anything like that for a while. It was empowering. It showed women living on their own, being independent, the ups and downs of that, and then the support system of other women, which I loved. I loved the way that the four women interact and that they're there for each other. And sometimes they do fall out and have disagreements and don't agree with each other's lifestyles, especially Samantha's lifestyle, especially like you compare Samantha to a Charlotte, which are total opposite ends of the spectrum. But, yeah, I loved Sex and the City, the TV show. I loved the movie.
Now, wait a minute. Did you just say you didn't like Samantha?
No, I said I loved. I liked the way that it showed.
The contrast between her. Okay.
Yeah, the contrast between the two characters.
Okay, because you was going to get on my bad side, man. Man, I love me some Samantha, man. She was mode one.
To the extreme. But I liked what she represented, which was sexual freedom and sexual conversation, to be able to express what you're thinking, what you want, and to go after it.
Wait. I got it. My listeners know I got to capture that. Now, you said sexual conversation and being essentially upfront and straightforward with it, right?
Right. Mode one.
Okay. Now, I usually don't do it this early, but all my listeners know at some point in the conversation, whether it's a male or female guest, particularly when they talk about things to do with honesty, I get my guests to stretch out the O's and say, now I want you in your most seductive voice to say, Mo One.
I'm going to make you wait for it.
I got to look at my chat room to see how they reacted to that. She said she's going to make a brother wait for it?
I'm not warmed up yet.
That's something. Ooh, I'm gonna let you get away with that. That might be a upfront and straightforward first woman telling me she gonna make me
no one.
Can you believe that, listener? She told Alan Rogers Curry, I'm gonna make you wait for that. Now,
like going back to Sex and the City, though, one thing that I didn't like about, not that I didn't like, but one thing that I thought was missing was that they never talked about their families, their backgrounds, what shaped them, how they became the women that they were. And so that's something that I wanted to address in my book. You know, it has the female camaraderie, the relationships, but it shows the background and how the parents' interaction with the children, how that affects their relationship decisions.
Okay. Now, I asked you about what got you into writing in general. Now, more specifically, what series of events in your life, whether you just, I don't know, sat down one day and thought about some of the conversations you had with your closest female friends or the good times you had in the summertime with these female friends, what led to you saying, I'm going to write Single Girl Summer?
It was a little bit of all those things. I felt like there was a void. Just like when Waiting to Exhale came out, there's a women's ensemble book and then the movie. And then when Sex and the City came out, okay, a women's ensemble TV show. And then you had Girlfriends. But I felt like it was time for something else to come out. And I was like, okay, well, I'm waiting. I didn't see anything come out. I was like, well, maybe I could do it, you know, myself, because I've got interesting stories. My friends have stories. Chicago is such a great backdrop. The city of Chicago, to me, it functions as a character in the book. And then the biggest thing that encouraged me to write was that I was married and I got divorced. And so that transition going from being single and then going to being married and then going back single, that I just felt like there was so much that I learned. There were so many experiences, and I wanted to capture that and share it with people. And then lots of people would ask my perspective on different things. I'm like, man, you give such great advice. Like, you should write a book. And I was like, okay, maybe I will. And it just kept happening over and over again. And so I said, okay, I'm gonna try this.
Okay, so you were married, and then you had to adjust to being single again. So that kind of gives me a segue into my next question. I was going to ask you, which of the three main female characters did you, I'm assuming you being the author, there's probably a little bit of you in Button. For my listeners, that's one of the main characters, Button, then there's Megan, then there's Dawn. Would you say you are most similar to Megan or not necessarily?
Well, I just want to give a little synopsis of the three main characters. You've got Button Jackson, who is on the back of the book, it says, Button Jackson knows two things for sure. All men cheat and all women are rivals. And when men read the back of the book, they're like, oh, God, it's another man-hating book. But it's not. So it's no surprise that the impeccably dressed restaurateur, she owns a restaurant, hasn't had a serious boyfriend or a close girlfriend or any connection of substance in years. So she cannot commit. She will not commit. She's the ultimate single girl. But that comes from the fact that her parents had a lot. She has a lot of family dysfunction. So she has a fear of commitment. So that's Button Jackson. And then there's Megan Cherry, who has the opposite problem. She's recently divorced, and so she's trying to figure out, you know, what went wrong. She gave so much to her marriage, and it just fell apart. Her parents have been married for 30-something years, and she, you know, was in her mind, she thought that she would have the same thing that they have, and that was her goal, and it fell apart for her. So she's wrestling with that and then transitioning back to being single again. And then the last character is Dawn Martin, who is stuck somewhere in the middle. She's been with her boyfriend for 6 years, and he still hasn't proposed, and she feels like they're the perfect couple because she's a very anal attorney, and he's very successful. And, you know, she's like, oh, we're going to be this great power couple, but he won't propose. And then he ends up doing something crazy. And so she's trying to decide if she should stay in the relationship or go. So she represents that woman that's at a crossroads trying to decide which path to take. So of the three characters, I would say that, you know, Megan is the one that I is most informed by my experiences, but I love all three of my girls.
See, just as you were describing the characters, oh, man. If time permitted, I could have you on here for 3 hours dissecting your book and your characters and your storylines, because it's very interesting to me, because as I'm sure it is for women, when, like, I've had women who've read my books, for example, and said, Alan, even the things I disagreed with, it was just interesting to get a further glimpse of how men think and see where we're similar, see where we're totally different, somewhere in between. And that's what I got from reading your book. I mean, it's like, some things just made me shake my head. So with your permission, as we go on with this interview, I want to throw out, and I don't, of course, for those who haven't read it, I don't want to give too much away, but I do want to highlight certain, I guess, dialogue quotes that caught my eye, and I'm either have a question associated with that quote, or I'm going to just ask you to further elaborate on and clarify what that means to you, because I might be thinking something different. But before I do that, I want to invite my listening audience throughout the rest of the conversation. If you have a question or comment for my guest this evening, Miss Deanna Kimberly Burrell, call 646-478-5710 and please press 1, the number 1, to let me know that you do want to speak, because a lot of people just call in just to listen. They listen to my show via the phone. Well, I was going to go to intermission break, but I see I have two people, and it looks like they pushed the button, so I'm going to see what they're talking about already.
Yeah, let's see what they're talking about.
Area code 317-317, you are now up front and straightforward with Alan Roger Curry and my guest, Deanna Kimberly Burrell. What's your question or comment?
What's going on, Alan Roger Curry? This is Steve from Indianapolis, brother. What's going on?
What's up, Steve from Indianapolis, Naptown, in the house?
Hi, Steve.
Yeah. I'm mainly on political picking boys apart. But questions that I've been asking a lot of people, and it's not really concerning your books, I haven't read your book, is average person is going through 3 or 4 marriages before they drop dead in the casket. And I know that can't be healthy mentally. So, you know, what is going on with American men and women? Are they just not compatible? I mean, what the hell is going on? People going to Dominican Republic and black women going to Africa? What's going on for both of you? Because we need to find out what the hell is going on. We keep doing the same thing and they're not getting results.
Wait,
so
what are they going to the DR in Africa for?
To meet men. You got all kind of, this is like an exodus where black men and women are trying to.
So you're saying
based on what
you've heard and read, that a lot of people, particularly
are just leaving this country,
are going out of the country looking for their spouses.
Okay, so they're trying to export, import talent.
Yes.
Well, you know, it's a big world. You can find love all over. But
Steve, that's a very broad question, and I could answer it. I could take a half hour to answer that question. But I think, generally speaking, my opinion would simply be that this age group, my age group anyway, I think is kind of in like this transitional period. What I mean is that when I think about my mother and father, and I talk about this in my next book about how social programming affects our behavior in different ways. And my mother and father were raised with their gender roles totally different than the gender roles that have been exposed to us over the last, say, 20, 30 years. You know, for example, you take women. Women weren't, back in the early to middle part of the 20th century, encouraged to pursue a career as a CEO of their own company or a high-ranking corporate executive. Most women were looking either not to work at all and just be a stay-at-home moms, or maybe get a little job as, you know, a part-time job doing this, or at most maybe a teacher. But now women are making it happen career-wise, and quite frankly, a lot of men can't handle that. They can't handle what they feel is the attitude, the independent attitude that comes along with that. And there's a lot of things that, you know, women can't handle about men. So, you know, that we have to almost save that question. I can make an entire show just on answering that question. But I thank you, Steve, for calling in. And I'm going to take one more call before I go to my next intermission break. Area code 252, you're now up front and straightforward with Alan Roger Curry and my guest, Deanna Kimberly Burrell. What's your question or comment? Oh, she dropped. I guess she got intimidated. So anyway, if you do have a question or comment, again, throughout the conversation, call in 646-478-5710. 5710, and again, press 1 so that I know you have something to say. And right now, I'm going to let my guest get a swig of water, and I'm going to take about roughly a 4-minute break, and then 4 minutes from now, I'll be right back with a number of questions for Miss Deanna Kimberly Burrell. Don't go anywhere.
Hey, I'm Dangerously. And you may have read my short story, Till Death Do Us Part, in the New York Times best-selling anthology, Succulent, Chocolate Flavor 2, presented by Bay. Well, things get even hotter between the pages of Keep Your Panties Up and Your Skirt Down. Check it out at PantiesUpSkirtDown.com. And remember, keep it dangerous. Mode 1.
You're about to enter into the erotic zone with yours truly, Alan Roger Curry, the king of verbal seduction. This is the Erotic Conversationalist.
This is Alan Roger, and you're listening to Alan Roger Curry, a.k.a. the king of verbal seduction, right here on the Erotic Conversationalist.
This is Layla Odom, and you're listening to Alan Roger Curry, a.k.a. the king of verbal seduction, right here on the Erotic Conversationalist.
This is Bella.
And this is Charlie.
And we're dancers from the legendary Score Chef Club in New York City. And you're listening to Alan Roger Curry, a.k.a. the king of verbal seduction, right here on the Erotic Conversationalist.
This is Alexandra Cunahakis, and you're listening to Alan Roger Curry, a.k.a. the king of verbal seduction, right here on the Erotic Conversationalist. So I'm getting treated for
my sex with D. This is Nick Trum, and you're listening to Alan Roger Curry, a.k.a. the king of verbal seduction, right here on the Erotic Conversationalist.
This is Ambrosia Cumming, and you're listening to Alan Roger Curry, a.k.a. the king of verbal seduction, right here on the Erotic Conversationalist.
Ain't you a little wet behind the ears to be running your mouth for? You don't really want me to run in your house.
Episodes of the Erotic Conversationalist are available as a downloadable MP3 file from www.mode1.net. All right, I'm going to go with my next caller, area code 310. 310. You are now up front and straightforward with Alan Roger Curry. What's your question or comment?
I used to date lots of women, both in high school and in college and in medical school, and people used to always ask me, you're not the best-looking guy, you're not the richest guy out there, how are you getting all these women? And essentially, the answer is actually quite simple. It's essentially having the confidence and knowing what you want to do.
Oh, thank you, Master Allen.
Ooh, say that again.
Yes, Master Allen.
Oh, say that again.
Yes, sir, Master Allen.
I like that.
Hey, buddy, thank you so much for having me. That is easily the nicest introduction that I've ever had.
Single, lonely, confused, join me. I invite you to listen to the most informative and entertaining talk radio show on the internet for single men and single women looking to enhance their social lives, love lives, and or sex lives. Get on the phone right now and tell one or two of your single friends to listen to Upfront and Straightforward with yours truly, Alan Roger Curry, Thursday evenings at 10 p.m. Eastern, 9 p.m. Central, and 7 p.m. on the West Coast, right here on the Blog Talk Radio Internet Radio Network. We now return to my interview with up-and-coming novelist Deanna Kimberly Burrell on Upfront and Straightforward with Alan Roger Curry right here on the Blog Talk Radio Internet Radio Network.
Hello.
Roger Curry, the number one talk radio podcast program on Blog Talk Radio for active dating singles. And my guest tonight is a woman who graduated from Northwestern University, and she's written a very entertaining book about three female friends and their other various family members, friends, and associates. And it's entitled Single Girl Summer. Single Girl Summer. And as my listeners know, see, she's in a rare category because I've been on the air since summer of 2007. So you're talking about 4.5 years, going on 5. I've only had 4 guests who wrote fiction books, because just about all my author guests were authors. Have written like a self-help type book. But every now and then, I have a guest who's written a fiction book. But of course, I try to tie it in to real life themes. And that's what I want to do tonight. Well, first, let me give a few shout outs to people who might have joined. I see William Reed in the chat room, Lord Lust in the chat room, The Manual in the chat room, a number of guests in the chat room. I see Glendon. My main man, Glendon, in the chat room. Glendon Cameron is in the chat room. He's one of my closest Facebook buddies. And I got Aaron 2213, and of course, Adrian, a.k.a. Diva 362636 from The Ohio State University. And I have a number of people listening in my phone queue, such as Irvin V. Pulliam, 3rd, EVP 3, Don Calypso. Now, Deanna.
Yeah.
Well, let me ask you, are you still friends with many women who you attended high school and or college with?
Yeah, I am. The funny thing is, two of my really good friends now, we went to high school together, but we weren't friends in high school. We met, I knew them in high school, but we didn't really hang out. And I met them after college, and we hang out all the time now. So it's just funny how that works. You never know.
Interesting. So you guys are cool as heck now, but you weren't cool in high school.
Yeah, not that we weren't cool, but we just didn't, you know.
Oh, I know what it was. You were in the in crowd, and she was on the outskirts in crowd. And she was like, God, I really wish I could hang around Deanna.
Oh. And
I was like, please.
Oh, please.
Hang with me, shoot, girl. You got it.
You are funny. That's you. That's your story.
Oh, I ain't that so. Now, all the chapters I read were interesting, all of them. But there were some that definitely well, first, before I get into my juicy questions, what does your family think about it, your book? Have they read it?
That's funny. No.
She's like, no.
My sister, I get on her all the time. Like, she'll say some, you know, she'll ask me to do something. If I don't do it, she'll, you know, and I'll be like, you haven't even read my book, so get out of here. But my mother, she read like one of the earlier drafts, and I don't know why she hasn't read it yet. She keeps saying she's read it, and then I'll ask her something. She's like, she can't answer it, so I don't think she's read it, but she says she has. My dad tried to read it, and, you know, it's chick lit, so it and the women are real stylish, so it talks about different designers and stuff. And he's like, I just kept getting lost. He was like, I don't know what these things are. But they're very proud of me, and, you know, they're very proud of the book, and they're very happy for me.
Aw, truly, they should be. I mean, writing just taking the time. I mean, you don't know. Well, I'm sure you probably do. You know, over the years, how many people told me they wanted to write a novel and started writing a novel, and those probably 98.3% of those people never completed a novel.
98.3.
Yeah. You got to know that about me. I'm big on percentages. As a matter of fact, a few of my listeners tease me on that. They like, Alan? Well, that's another story itself. But, yeah, I use percentages a lot.
I do feel such a great sense of accomplishment that I got it done. Because, I mean, just like that, you know, people come to me all the time and are like, man, I want to write a book, or I started this book and I haven't finished it. How did you do it? And it's a labor. You really have to be committed to it, especially because I work a full-time job. So it was like having two jobs, working on this and, you know, doing my regular job.
Yeah, I feel you. Because to touch on my book for a second, like, people know the backstory of my book. It took me about 15 years before I published my book. I first outlined my book like in 1990, and to be truthful, I never wanted to turn it into a book. It was because of the encouragement of my brother, who I always give credit to. He was the one who said, man, I think you should turn this into a book. And I was like, nah, dude, you can't transfer what I do to other men. And I mean, so you're laughing, but I really did believe that. I basically had something that was working for me, and
so
I thought the reason why
it
was working for me
huh?
was because of me.
You selfish.
Yeah, and I was like, you cannot transfer this type of... What it was, essentially, is that I was, whereas most guys would approach women, and for lack of a better term, would basically be full of shit with them, I would be very up, which is the title of the show, I would be very bold, upfront, and straightforward with them, to the point where they'd be like, oh my God, I don't believe you said that. And but I would get primarily favorable results. But again, I didn't think I could transfer that.
93.8% of the time.
You said what?
93.8% of the time.
Yeah, more like 87.6% of the time.
5-6.
I got a favorable result. And anyway, I don't want to go on a long story with that, but yeah, my brother was just like, man, I think you should turn the book. And then, yeah, it took forever for my mother to read it, you know. She's like, do I want to read this book? Am I going to look at you the same way after I'm finished with this book? And she wasn't too bad. When she read it, she was just like, oh, if you just take all the nastiness in there, it's actually a very good book. moms, you got to love them. Now, chapter 9. Okay, first, give me just a quick thought on this comment.
Okay.
That said, I believe by button, drinks are a requirement for all relationship conversations. Alcohol makes you see and tell the truth.
Yeah.
Just your quick thoughts on that comment.
You know, sometimes you do need to be sober when you're having discussions, but sometimes when you sit down with the ladies and you just really want to dish the dirt, you got to have the proper encouragement. And that, in my opinion, is alcohol.
Okay.
Be it a martini
courage.
Or a highball or a shot. Yeah.
Well,
because once you have that, then you start to tell the truth. You'll stop sugarcoating, and you have more of a full perspective, in my opinion.
Well, see, that's, you know, the best way to think of Mole One is to think of everything you said, but without the alcohol. That's essentially what Mole One is. Yeah, okay. That was interesting. Another, okay.
Do you agree? Wait, do you agree or disagree? I'm going to ask you some questions, too.
Oh, no, you couldn't get to turn the tables on me. I answer one question. What was the question?
Do you agree that relationship conversations go better over drinks?
No.
No.
Well,
but,
yes and no. I would almost say yes and no. If I had to just look at myself individually, I always tell people, and I even say it in one of my books, I've never been a guy that needs alcohol to be both bold and or uninhibited. Whereas I do know a lot of people, both male and female, who need some sauce in their system before they kind of, you know, show their real self and express their real thoughts. But that's, again, that's kind of the nature of how the Legend of Mole One came about, is that I have said shit to people, and particularly women, that has made women say that, like, damn, are you drunk or are you just really that bold? I mean, I'm not even saying that jokingly. I've had women ask me, they're like, are you inebriated?
I like that.
You don't really seem like you're drunk, but damn, I can't believe you just asked me that. I can't believe you just said that.
Sober.
So I would say me individually, I don't need it, but when I'm thinking of people I might be conversing with of both genders, yes, I think I definitely know certain people that they're not going to be as frank and as forthcoming without alcohol in their system.
And then sometimes the person you're talking to needs it, the person that has to listen to your story, you know what I mean?
Like, if I got to listen to all this. You need to have, like, a couple shots of vodka just to listen to
it. Yeah, if I got to listen to all this.
That
you
was
had
cute
to buy
there.
Me a drink.
So. That was cute there. Now, I'm going to take up for brothers who played in the NBA like Muggsy Bogues and Spud Webb. What is up with the emphasis on height? I don't think all your characters do, but there's at least one character. She was all about height. So I got to ask you, of course, I'm going to take a lot of comments and ask you, what is the real-life correlation? Do you have a lot of girlfriends that put a lot of emphasis on height the way this particular character did?
I have noticed that a lot of women have a height requirement. And I have a couple of friends that are tall. And so I understand it. But then I have some women that are short. And it's like, okay. So I do make the comment in the book, one of the characters, Dawn is the one that wants the tall man. And she herself is not super tall. I think she's maybe 5'6" or something. 5'4", 5'6". And so one of the character, one of the other characters makes a comment to her, like, would you really throw away a really great guy because he's not tall enough? Like, you really need to look at your list, because that's what that conversation gives way to. Okay, you've got these lists of requirements, but is that a good list? Is that a good quality? Should you be looking at these superficial features, or should you be getting to the heart and the soul of the person and how they treat you and how they act? So that's what the height thing, it's a segue into this other conversation.
Well, I did notice that, and that's a sign of your good writing, where you have, say, one character be very shallow and superficial, and then another character is kind of admonishing them for being that way. And I did notice that type of interchange in a lot of discussions. But, yeah, because, man, y'all going to have brothers, shoot, maybe include myself, just self-conscious about height. I mean, I think realistically I would be naive to say that both men and women don't have their degree of superficiality when it comes to certain qualities. Like, I think, honestly, men, in the same way a lot of women might emphasize height, women, I mean, with men, is weight. Now, you mentioned that some of your friends are tall. I'm the same way with women and height as I am with women and money. If a woman's 5'9", and she's like, I don't want to date a brother that's 5'7", because I'm 5'9", I don't have any criticism of her. Because she's saying she wants a brother who's at minimum her height, if not taller. Same with a woman, like I always say, like some guys would be quick to call a woman a gold digger, but I always say, if a woman making $100,000 herself a year, and she says she want a man to make, say, $125,000, I ain't mad at her.
You ain't mad at that?
No. Now, if she's making $25,000 a year, and she's like, my man got to make
$125,000.
That's gold
digger. Hey, she's firing up.
And same with height. If a woman is 4'11", and she's like, I got to have a man that's 6'5", it's like, shut up. You do not need no 6'5 brother with your 4'11 self.
You better be happy with 5'2.
Yeah, that's right. If she get a brother that's 5'3, he's skying over her. So she needs to just shut the fuck up. Yeah, so that tripped me out. Well, let me ask you, Deanna Kimberly Barrera. I like people with three names that flow right, like Alan.
Really?
Curry,
Alan
Deanna,
Roger Curry.
Oh, say that again.
Alan Roger Curry.
Oh, I like that. Where would you, Deanna, draw the line between having selective standards for male companionship versus just being extremely and unrealistically nitpicky and persnickety?
Where do I draw the line?
What would mark the distinction for you between saying, okay, these are standards that I just have to uphold, they're non-negotiable, versus some things you might be looking for in a male companion that even you yourself might, a year or two later, look back and say, I was just being really too nitpicky when I said, like, a man got to have all dry, clean shirts in the closet before I date him.
I think that's where I draw the line, when you're excluding people for superficial reasons. You know, I don't like the way he dresses. Okay, that's cosmetics. You can help a man dress better. You know, he's too short. He's 2 inches shorter than me. Okay, well, if this is a great guy who's giving you everything that you need, he makes you feel good about yourself, you feel good when you're around him. Really? 2 inches? Okay, I think that's where I draw the line. When you exclude a great guy for something that is superficial, that you need to get over.
Uh-huh. Okay, that was good feedback. Now, I found this comment very amusing. I forget which character said it, but drama lets a man know you're serious.
That's right. Damn it.
Now, do you or any of your friends really, has somebody in real life said that to you? Drama lets a man know you're serious.
I don't think so. I don't know. I've made a bunch of stuff. It's funny, someone sent me an email on my website, and she's like, I read your book. I loved it. I can't wait to go through the website. I'm looking for this recipe because I have some different recipes and stuff in the book. And I was like, oh, I made that up. But no, I made it up, but, you know, I like the idea of it.
Well, I'm going to ask you now.
Sometimes you can't be too calm. Sometimes you do just got to take it there, because
okay,
you want them to know, like, I'm really pissed.
Well, I told you I love percentages, so now I'm going to ask you to give me a percentage. What percentage of your dialogue would you say was based on real-life conversations with girlfriends versus dialogue you just purely put in for just kind of entertaining, fictional?
That's a good question. Huh. I would say about 65.43% is based on real conversations. And when I say that, I'm going to caveat it by saying, not that I agree or disagree, but these are real perspectives that I've heard. And then the rest of stuff that
I like that. I like that you said that because, I mean, like when I wrote, say, for example, certain screenplays, I might have dialogue in there that might have had a character saying something that I might not philosophically agree with, but it was still some real shit I heard.
Right.
Versus, say, having some dialogue that you know you ain't never heard in none of your conversations, but you say, damn, this just sounds like it, you know, it would have impact to the viewer.
And that's one thing, you know, as I was going through the process with my book and different people would read it and critique it, that was one feedback that I got was the strength of the dialogue of the book. You know, they're like, you write dialogue so well. And, I mean, as I'm writing, I'm saying everything out loud to make sure that it sounds natural. That's something that someone would say, that someone's going to read and be like, that's ridiculous. You know, no one talks like that. Nobody thinks like that. So the dialogue, I feel, is really strong in the book. But there's also pieces of entertainment because it's a fiction book, so you want to be entertained when you read it. So yeah, some things go to the left and some things are a little out there, a little crazy, but
well, I have to say this is interesting because, and this probably applies to a lot of books, movies, whatever, is that a lot of the dialogue that did honestly make me shake my head like, this woman's crazy for saying that. That was the negative, but the positive was it was entertaining. So I can't say if the book was just full of kind of just very conventional dialogue with moderate opinions, it wouldn't have been as entertaining. But like a good example was like the height thing. You know, that made me shake my head like, what's wrong with this woman talking about? She got to have a man at 6 feet. But at the same time, that's what made it entertaining to read was the fact that she was that superficial. So,
and
yeah,
I love to hear that. Like, that's one of the highest praises that I feel like I can receive is when someone says, I read it and I didn't agree with everything, but it gave me something to think about or it was entertaining. Because my goal was to write a book that has good relationship advice, but in a fun, easy to read story. Because when you talked earlier about you haven't had that many fiction authors on, because you like to focus on books, you know, that talk about that self-help, relationship manuals. Yeah. And I wanted to do something like that, but not so straightforward. And I'm not an expert in everything, so I don't want to palm myself off as saying, okay, I'm going to tell you how to make your relationship better and make your life perfect. But what I do want to give is some different perspectives and ideas and things to think about.
Okay.
And
yeah,
another great thing about the book is
that
it's...
You just made a boo-boo on my show.
Oh, what did I do?
You said I did not want to be that straightforward. That I got to let you know, and I'll give you a pass first time you did it. But see, on this show, that's a no-no, because this is not called Upfront and Beat Around the Bush with Alan Roger Curry. This is called Upfront and... That's your cue.
And...
Upfront and...
Mode One.
No. You talking on my show, you don't even know what show you're on. This is
Wait,
upfront
I do.
Straightforward.
Straightforward. Upfront and straightforward.
Upfront and straightforward.
With Alan Roger Curry.
And she going to say, I did not want to be that straightforward. That's blasphemous. So just for that, now it's time for you to say mode one.
That's my penance, to say mode one.
Alan Roger Curry.
Upfront and straightforward.
Alan Roger Curry.
Mo one.
That was good, Deanna.
Thank you.
Now you got to
very quickly. Am I forgiven?
No, you got to very quickly say, I'm sorry, Alan Roger Curry, for not promoting being straightforward.
Well, I'm not that I'm not promoting being straightforward, but the book is different because it's fiction. It's not a self-help manual.
I get the one and only way to go. Now, there was mention, and this was just my topic, actually. Yeah, my very last show before Thanksgiving, I had a show on polyamorous dating and open relationships, open marriages. And, of course, you have a character whose love interest or companion suggested that they have an open relationship. So let me ask you, have you yourself ever thought about it? If not, have you had a close friend that was engaged in an open relationship? And what are your general thoughts on the idea? Because most people usually have strong opinions either on one end or the other. They're either totally for it or they're totally against it. Not too many people are in between when it comes to open relationships. So what's been your experiences and thoughts about open relationships?
Open relationships, to be in an open relationship, there has to be an understanding. Like, how honest are we going to be with each other? Like, do you want to know or do you not want to know? And then once you know, what are you going to do with that information? See, open relationships, because I sometimes wrestle with that, you know, are humans naturally monogamous? Is that natural for them to be with one person all the time? But the thing about an open relationship is that all these other emotions and traits come in and just kind of mess it up. So you can say that you're okay with it, but then the jealousy and the not knowing and not feeling like you're number one, because humans are naturally competitive. You always want to be number one. And then you're worrying, okay, well, where am I ranked now? Am I 2? Am I 3? Am I 10? So open relationships are difficult to maintain because you have all these different elements. That's how I feel about them.
Oh, so you just provoked all kinds of thoughts in my head. See, I've actually had some experiences that some women found amusing. Other women have actually, they didn't like this. But it relates to something in your book that a woman had. Now, I've actually, and I've talked about this on my show before, but I've actually had a situation where, say, I was dealing with 5 women, and they actually had numbers assigned to them. Like, one knew they were number 1, the other one knew they were number 2, the other one knew they was number 3. And, of course, I had some women, how dare you, that's so misogynistic, I can't believe you, Alan. But I always say, hey, I tell men this, you lay out your program, and either women going to be down with your program or they're not.
Right.
And that's I would say the same thing with women.
I can respect a man that at least is honest about it. Yeah. Like, tell me what's up and let me decide if I want to play the game.
See, you feel them all once. Yeah. See, that's why we're not going to have a contention. Because I can tell you feeling on one, and some, not only would I say some women are not feeling on one, there's even a lot of men who are not feeling on one. There's a lot of men, they want to stick to the whole, you know, the whole line stuff. Like, I had a brother ask me recently, he said, hey, man, he's talking to another guy, he's talking about having 2 or 3 cell phones, you know, he had different women had one number and other women had, and he said, yeah, so Alan, I know you can relate to that. And I looked at him like,
no,
brother,
I can't.
Please. I'm like, dude, I would never do no stupid shit like that.
That's a lot of work.
I said, if I'm dealing with multiple women, the multiple women I'm dealing with know I'm dealing with multiple women. I said, I ain't never been one to have, you know, be, say, messing around with 3 different women and making each of them think that they the only one. Because that's the type of shit that leads to your tires getting slashed. And,
yeah, exactly.
You know, you can't fuck with people's emotions. And,
exactly.
Now that gives me a segue, though. You do have a character that has, like, her team. That tripped me out. In a way, I kind of respected it because I could relate to it. But it's rare where I hear a woman kind of talk like that. Now, I got to ask you, just like I'm going to be asking this, I guess, a lot with different questions. Is that something based on real life conversation with women, or did you just make that up for the book?
No, that's based on some real conversations. You know, a lot of women are experimenting with this whole date like a man thing. You know, men can do it, so why can't we do it? And so I wanted to explore that in her character. And then she stands in sharp contrast to the other two characters who are, you know, the book starts in the spring. And by the way, the book is available on Amazon if you want to purchase a copy. And it starts in the spring, and you meet Budden Jackson, who's this ultimate single girl. She's, you know, got these relationship phobias and commitment issues. But her thing is, you know, I'm going to date a team of men. I'm going to tell them what's up, kind of like you said, mode one, I'm be honest with it, and it is what it is, and I love it, and I'm good. And then she meet Megan, who is newly divorced, but she still, you know, wants to be married again someday, still sees the positives in being married and being in a, you know, committed relationship. And then she meets Dawn, also, who is in this, like, weird long-term relationship that's not going anywhere, but she's holding on. And so they meet and they exchange their different relationship perspectives. So one person is on this side and the other person is on that side, and they don't have to agree, but they can have a really good conversation about it. So through each character and their contrast, you go through these different you know, exercises on how do you feel about relationships.
Yeah, because it was interesting. Again, I don't want to give too many juicy parts away in your book. Now, first of all, I got to tease you. You're funny. I've had a number of authors on my show, and usually I wait to the very end to give them what I call plug time. But Deanna, first she told me to wait before she was going to say, well, she's like, no, I haven't warmed up yet. You're going to have to wait. So that was an upfront, straightforward first. And then she just takes it for herself to plug her own book in the midst of every question. She's
but
like, yes, Alan, I would like
to say
that. Oh, by the way, on Amazon.com, Kindle 2, and yes, get it right now. Anyway, to answer your question, you are a character, Deanna Kimberly Burrell.
Well, just in case they can't, you know, it's getting late and the news is going off and people may have feel the bad, I just want them to know. You can get the book on Amazon. You can go to the website, singlegirlsummer.com, find out more.
I ain't mad at you because I've done the same shit when I've been interviewed on other people. I'll be throwing out mo1.net. But yeah, it was interesting to listen to the woman talk about her team because she had these interesting terms like half boyfriend, quarter boyfriend. Now, I didn't know if I agree with her definition of sponsors. It was... she kind of used it differently than I've normally heard that. What, in the context of your book, what is a sponsor?
Okay, so she dates a team.
Okay.
She's got the top guy who's the half boyfriend. So it's all the fun of a boyfriend but no responsibility.
Okay.
So she spends the most time with him, and if she needs a companion to go somewhere, he's the guy. So he's someone, if she wanted to get married, he's like the perfect guy to marry, but she doesn't want to get married. So that's the half boyfriend. He's in the top position. Then you've got the quarter boyfriend, who's, you know, the boy toy. He's, you know, he's buff blonde. He's there to get it on. So he's just there for physical carnal pleasure. He's a cool guy, but that's his main position. And then he also keeps her from getting too attached to the half boyfriend. And then the last quarter is this group of sponsors. So just the guys that, you know, they just take you out to dinner. They're trying to get it, but... so
they're trying to get
the
pussy, but they haven't gotten it yet.
Right. And they'll do whatever it takes. They'll take you out. They'll buy you stuff. They're fillers. So if the other two are busy, you call up a filler.
See, us
so
men,
it took,
we would
it took
use
me a lot
term.
To come up with this, too. Like, I went through a bunch of different scenarios. Like, I was, you know, I was talking to a bunch of different people. I was talking to this one guy. I'm like, okay, well, what are the positions on a basketball team? Okay, you got the center, and you've got this guy. Okay, so I tried that. That didn't work. I tried football team positions. I tried all these different things. So it took me a long time to come up with the half, quarter, and the sponsors. And I'm tickled by it every time I hear it.
Yeah, it was a trip. Now, see, because, yeah, we wouldn't, most men I know, we wouldn't call the guys you described as sponsors. We wouldn't call them sponsors. We would call them tricks. Trick. Because, see, a sponsor is usually the guy who's actually fucking the woman, but he's also acting as a sugar daddy.
Right.
You know, he's paying a lot of her bills. He's subsidizing lifestyle, but he is getting the pussy.
Right.
But, yeah, you know, a trick or even more harsher term would be a chump. Yeah, that's a guy who's trying to get the pussy by spending money, but he ain't getting it.
Yeah, so it's a spin on it, you know. She don't want to call him.
Now, what's been talked about on this show, and this has led to very sensitive discussions and sometimes contentions. Now, we know not only how judgmental a lot of men can be with women, but even women are judgmental on other women. So I'm surprised that nobody who, the woman in the book who had a team, that nobody was saying, oh, you just a damn hoe.
No, they have that conversation.
Oh, I must have missed that.
Yeah, they have that conversation.
Oh, okay.
I don't think you got through to, there's a big fight towards the end, so I don't know if you got to that part. Did you get to the old school picnic?
No, I don't think, I must not have.
Yeah, there's a big blow up, and there was some holes.
Those words exchanged.
Yeah.
Now, it's funny you mentioned old school. Now, you reference a lot of real stuff, like you mentioned jazzing at the Shed.
Yeah.
So
like I said,
you don't have too many fictional Chicago events. You use real events from Chicago, right?
Yeah, and I thought that just it adds so much to the book. And when people read it and they give me feedback, they're like, "I love this book." Especially people that had lived in Chicago or visited Chicago and lived somewhere else. They're like, "Oh my gosh, it made me remember the time that I was in Chicago, or it made me reminisce," because I reference real events like the Taste of Chicago. They go to the Taste of Chicago, so I describe the scene and everything that's going on. They go to the old school picnic, which is this huge African-American event here in Chicago, because house music is just, I don't know if it started here, but it's loved here. And so
yeah, it's typically associated with Chicago.
Yeah.
You're right. I don't know for sure if it started. But most people, when you talk about house music, you just associate that with Chicago.
And so they have this event. The Old School Picnic is my favorite event of the summer. And so they go to it's also called the Chosen Few Picnic. So they go to that event. They go to the Bean in Millennium Park. So Chicago is definitely a character. Like on the website, I list different characters, and I list Chicago because it adds so much color and flavor to the book.
I like that in you, Deanna. Now, before I leave that subject, because that's been a juicy subject on this show, I find in the day and age we're living in, you almost have two types of women. You got a lot of women in the 21st century that are truly liberated, and they don't give a fuck what other people think. They won't have their teams. I met a woman, actually, this summer, was like that. In Chicago, where she lived in the suburbs of Chicago. But she was, I appreciate it. She was more one when we were talking. And she basically told me, she said, right now, I'm fucking three different dudes. I said, so you like the Tracy Camellia Johns from She's Gotta Have It. She was like, yeah, basically. She said, they're not all the same. They have different kind of, they had different sexual roles. Like one was good at going down on her. One dude was just good at just tearing it up. And other dude, he would kind of be more romantic and shit. So they weren't the same type of lover. She had, like, different categories.
Right, so she had a different flavor for every day of the week.
But she was bold in the sense that she did not care. Because I asked her, like, what if your girlfriend start talking about you? And she's like, I don't give a fuck. She's like, this is my life. I do what the fuck I want to do. And I was like, damn. And
she was like,
educated, professional, and no, like, just street sister. This is a. But she, yeah. So, but then you had those other women who I've had on this show that, like, oh my God, that's just disgusting. Oh, I mean, you should have one lover, and you should be the marriage,
and you should answer all your.
So, based on your female friends, do you think a lot of your female friends have become more liberated when it comes to non-monogamous sex, or you still got a lot of prudish friends who are like,
I'm not going to say they're prudish, but I think, yeah, most of my friends prefer monogamous sex. But then, I got some, they get it in. So it's a little bit, it's a little mixture. Sometimes it just depends on the season, In the winter, we settle down. In the summer, we
got
to go somewhere. So.
See, I love guests that just keep it real. That's listeners, that's real talk right there.
You might meet the right guy. You'd be like, oh, okay, I'm going to lock it down. You might meet another guy. You're like, yeah, he's all right sometimes, but.
I heard that. Okay, now I see some phone lines lighting up. So let me take one. Is, I think, an internet call because it's 111. So I don't know the area code, but area code 111, you are now up front and straightforward with Alan Roger Curry and my guest, Deanna Kimberly Burrell. What's your question or comment?
What's your name?
I don't know the name. It just says on my phone queue 1111.
Yes, I'm on, Alan. Hi, how are you?
And hey, how do you guess, this is Richard, DM? Right?
Hi.
Hi.
Hello, Alan. The lady that you just described was very interesting, and I'm going to categorize that as emotionally unavailable. That particular woman that's boinking three different that's shipping three different guys, she is emotionally unavailable. But in the same vein, I would like to ask you, if you don't mind, and then get your guest's opinion, elaborate on the statement that you made that 97.8% of women, in your opinion, do not make good girlfriends or good wives.
Did you say that tonight? I don't remember hearing that.
No, Alan has said that before, and I think that's... Alan, can you hear me?
No, what I said is, I said this in a book, is that there was a guy on Facebook.
Right.
He wrote that he said probably, and Deanna shows I'm not the only one who uses percentages. He used percentages. This is actually in my next book. I got this in there. He wrote on one of his stash boards, he said, I would say that probably 97.5% of the women I meet, I just want to fuck. He said only about 2.5% of women do I look at as girlfriend material or potential wife material. And Brothers was just, you know how you click like on Facebook? Brothers was liking that
liking
comment.
Liking the hell out of that, huh?
And so I think I discussed that on a previous show. And I won't lie, my percentage is not too far off from that. I mean,
what's your percentage?
It's close to that. It's close to that. I mean, it might not be. But, yeah, I've met far more women that I just wanted something casual or short term or whatever than a woman that has. See, here's my thing, and I always say this, and of course I get a lot of disagreement. I personally do not think you can go out looking for love. A lot of people, including some of the experts I've had on my show, have said that you can. I'm not going to argue with other people's belief system. I think the whole love thing, I think that's shit that just happened. Because I've seen it happen with my boys. I've known friends of mine, frat brothers of mine, who had no intention, say in December of 2005, they was talking about getting as much pussy as they could possibly get. And then in July of 2006, it's like, damn, dude, man. I cannot stop thinking about her, man. That shit just happened. That's with me. Most of the women I was crazy over, I didn't, like, predict that. I didn't, like, you know, just look at somebody and say, yeah, she did. No, that shit just happened. So, but men, we pursue sex. That don't just happen. You pursue that. I meet women and say, damn, I want to fuck her. And so, yeah, that's my spiel. And the little secret I always give women, and it might work for some, might work. I say, if you are looking for the husband, the serious guy, you got to talk to that guy and find out what he loved about his mom. Because I wrote an article about another subject we talked about on the show, the Madonna Whore Syndrome. I don't know if you're familiar with the Madonna Whore Complex.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of men, put that in bold and italic, suffer from the Madonna. For those listeners that might be ignorant to what the Madonna Whore Complex, there's a lot of guys out here in society that want basically two women in their life. They want one woman that represents the best qualities of their mother, and they want her to be their quote-unquote good girl, the one they're going to put a ring on her finger. Then they want another woman who's the antithesis of that, who's just a raunchy, nasty, slutty freak who they can just pull her hair and slap her ass and just fuck the shit out of her. But they don't want those two to be the same woman in the same body. They have to be in two separate bodies. And I would take a step further and say most men, their standard, unless they had a dysfunctional relationship with their mother, their standard is always going to be their mom. I can't tell you how many friends, male friends I have, who are married to women who have characteristics like their mom, including my own older brother. My older brother, he's married. His wife has a lot of qualities like my mom. And because subconsciously, this is what a man says. He knows he can live, on average, about 18 years with his mom. So if he meets a woman that has similar qualities to mom, he's like basically going to say to himself, I know I can live with her for 18 years. But if a woman is far different from his mom, you only want to contradict that man's mom's not-so-great qualities. But you want to imitate. I'm not saying a woman should just change her personality to try to basically totally emulate a guy's mom, but I'm saying that a man is going to be most likely to fall for someone that has at least a handful of quality like his mom. But, yeah, that's a big thing with a lot of guys. I've had guys just flat out admit about the Madonna whore. Like, I've had a couple guys that say, Alan, man, I cannot be real freaky with my wife. I'll say, why not? They're like, man, that's the mother of my children. I respect her. I got to have a woman on the side who I can just be nasty and super freaky with. And so for guys who suffer from the Madonna whore complex, they don't want the lady, what's that saying, the classy lady in the streets and the freak in the sheets. They don't want the two personalities in the same body. They got to be in separate bodies. So anyway, that's my thoughts. But, you know, the percentage thing, I would say that's to one degree. Now, that's true with most guys. Most guys probably meet more women in their lifetime that they just want to fuck than they do.
But 98 and 2?
Well, yeah, that was high, yeah. But that's what this guy on Facebook, his was 90. I remember it was 97.5. I actually put that in my book, and I go ahead and talk
about
it.
But you say you're not too far from that.
I would say if I was giving my estimation, say, over the last, I don't know, 15 years, yeah, I would probably say at minimum mine would be somewhere between 85 and 90.
Okay.
I'll say probably no less than 85% of women I meet, I've just wanted to have a kicking it type relationship, ranging anywhere from a weekend fling to like maybe 6 to 9 months of fun in the bed. But I usually know within my first month or two of interacting with a woman if she's going to be like the one I want to just like spend time with exclusively. And usually it's interesting for me. That usually has very little, if anything, to do with sex. Like, there's one thing that I think is naive of a lot of women. A lot of women think they're going to win guys over by having some great pussy. I've had women say that to me. They say, yeah, I know when he gets some of this stuff, he ain't going. That's bullshit. And I say that on my show all the time. My listeners know. That is bullshit. Men do not fall in love over no good pussy. A man is more likely to fall in love over a great blowjob than he is over great. I'm just keeping it real. As my listeners know, I keep real on my show. Men do not, ladies, if you're listening, if you still believe that shit, men do not fall in love over great pussy. For most men, pussy is pussy. They you know, they get a kick out of the different moans. You know, Linda moans different than Tanya. But at the end of the day, pussy is pussy. Now, I've heard brothers rave for months over a woman's blowjob skill. They'd be like, damn, I want to put a ring on her finger because of the way she sucked my dick. But sex aside, the woman who I look at
that.
Is special, like, damn, I just is, you just think about it. I don't want to sound corny or cliche, but you think about little shit like, damn, I love the way she giggles when I crack certain jokes, or I love the way she, like, just moves her head to the side when it's, like, on her forehead. Just little shit that you just remember, and you, like, you miss that woman when she's not around you. That would be probably the simplest thing I would say. That's, I think when most men know they really starting to fall for a woman is when that woman, say, goes out of town for a week and you hanging one of your boys. You're like, damn, dude, why you keep spacing out? I don't know, man. I keep thinking about so-and-so and damn. You can be like, damn, dude, she coming back Wednesday. Damn, but, you know, it seems like she been going, like, for a month. That's when I'll start teasing guys. I'll be like, dude, you in the syndrome. You're in the syndrome. You falling. But yeah, but no, good pussy, that's the overrated myth among, I ain't gonna say all women, but some women. I've heard women say that, say, yeah, shit, he might have had some other women, but when he get to, nah, that's bullshit.
You know, the expression, you learn something new every day. This is my learn something new moment.
Oh, okay. Well, now I'm glad I've been able
I'm
to help you out.
I'm glad you educated me.
Yeah, I said emphatically, men do not fall in love over a good pussy.
That would make a great conversation in my next book.
I mean, think about it. If men fell in love over good pussy, prostitutes, porno stars, call girls would be proposed to on a weekly basis.
There'd be more pretty women, huh? Pretty women syndrome.
On a weekly basis. But let me see who else I got. Wait, did I already talk to 843? 843?
No.
You're now up for the street. Did I already talk to you?
No, this is T-Smitty, man. Talk to
you
a while.
Smitty,
what's going on?
What's up, T-Smitty? I ain't heard your voice in a while, man. What's up, bro?
Hey, I'm all right. Alabama play for a national title, and my Bulls are back on TV.
Okay, now, T-Smitty, you and I usually think alike. Now,
yeah.
You heard a lot of stuff I just said. Would you disagree with anything I just said?
Man, I got some points to hit, but I'll say this, Alan, to piggyback off your point. I've been telling ladies this forever. Ladies, y'all pussy is not the Maltese Falcon. Men can find pussy anywhere. I'm just keeping it real. and we could find freaks anywhere. And also the thing with that is it's hard to find a woman that would give you her heart, your heart. I'm sorry, her heart than her body. It's easy to get the body. And I believe a lot of women just don't understand that because, let's be honest, it's plentiful. But the couple of things, I missed part of the show because I had to take care of some things, but it sounds like she was a smart lady and everything. And the thing is, I want to hit them. So correct me if I'm wrong on this. Hey, Alan, you know I have different dating rules than the average guy.
yes.
I make women pay their own way on dates, you know, because I feel like that, hey, she was for her option. So why should I keep paying for her whole day? She don't go home and screw some guy or date some other guy tomorrow.
Exactly.
You know?
Yep.
And I feel like that the thing, that's how I present it. If she don't like it, she can either pay, be quiet, or date somebody else. It's the way
Wait,
it is.
Wait, so when do you present that?
Oh, from jump, because I ain't wasting nobody's time.
So this is like our second conversation?
Oh,
you
yeah.
ask me
it's
out and you're like, just so you know, how does it go? I'm just curious.
Oh, I don't know how I roll. It kind of flows in, but at the same time, if I'm paying for everything and going to 2 for $20 Applebee's, I'm just being real. And if that woman doesn't like it, she's more than welcome to dip in her purse, keep a trap shut, or date somebody else. That's just my rule because my money, my rule.
And I would say, honestly, a lot of men in the 21st century are like that. Well, first of all, T. Smith, before you continue, I have to ask my guests a favor. Now, see, I kind of predicted this. Deanna, we flowing so well that...
let's keep the party going.
Every blue moon. Okay, she already gave me permission. So, listeners, I'm going to do what's called an extension because I rarely go over 2 hours. Only about maybe 8 to 10 shows over the last 3.5 years have gone over 2 hours, and that's when I was, like, what I call in the flow. And we in the flow. So we going to go roughly another half hour. Because I got a number of more questions to ask Deanna. But right now,
I
my main man, T. Smitty, got the floor. And I want him to finish his thoughts and his questions.
Okay, yes. I know she got questions for me. Hey, women always want to pick my brain. The thing is, like when ladies, see what Alan talking about not taking that long to figure out. See, the problem is the big disconnect is women think we're moving too fast. But the thing is, a man knows what he wants and you see that's a good woman. We're going to try to lock that down before some other guy come in and recognizes a good woman. Correct me if I'm wrong on that one, Alan.
That's real talk.
Yeah, because it's kind of like the NFL draft and Mel Kiper say, hey, that's a good player, but he kind of reached a bit. Hey, sometimes we got to reach. But because it's like because I hate to tell you women this, but a lot of women appraise themselves. Like I was saying, he's right, and that guy's statistics, right? Most of today's women are only there for a screw. There ain't too many wives out there. Because if there were so many wives out there, a lot of them be married by now. Because you got to think about this. The man has to pursue the woman. The man has to ask that woman to be his wife, his girl, and stuff like that. And I just believe that's a lot of big disconnects going on with that. And I'm ready for your questions, ma'am.
Wait, I got a question. Okay, so Alan said that most men fall in love with a blowjob. What do you fall in love with? I'm going to give you that same question.
A woman to cook, clean, and do what I tell her to do. No, I'm kidding.
No, you're not. You're not
kidding.
Yeah, you ain't lying. Hey, especially that last part, boy, I tell you. The thing is, with me, you know, I lived all over the world, so it's like sex is like, I get that anywhere. But the thing is, but one thing I do not get often with women is peace. Peace and stability trump looks any day.
You don't know how many brothers I've heard, I mean, interrupt, but I just got to interject in saying that. And Deanna, if you didn't know this already, this would be, I guess, another teachable moment. Because a perfect example, one quick story. I was at a wedding. I was a groomsman at one of my friend's wedding. This was probably like 3 years ago. I was grabbing this brother. So we got talking. Now, he was married to a sister, but he was telling me, he said, man, I was just on the verge of giving up on sisters forever. I said,
really? I did.
He said, man, I was starting to date, you know, none but white women. I said, really? I said, well, what made you first go to white women, then what made you come back to the sister you ultimately married? He said, man, if I had to sum it up, he said, man, sisters wouldn't give me no peace, man. He said, man, when I go to work, man, I work
hard. That's P-I-E-C-E.
What's
peace.
That?
Peace.
I caught that.
Wait, I'm this one.
It's a play on words.
Yeah. Now, she's talking about those sisters give them peace of their mind, not peace and happiness.
Oh, yeah, but, yeah, he was saying that, you know, he said he would work hard at his job. He said the last thing he wanted to do was come home and have drama, particularly over, like, what he felt was trivial shit.
Mm-hmm.
And he was dating a lot of women who would be going off on him, like, some stuff like the fact that he left his shoes in the middle of the living room or something, you know. And he was just like, okay, fuck this. And he said the white women weren't giving him that type of, you know, drama, I guess. But, you know, of course, he saw that women are women. And you can't put them in black versus white because white women got their own flaws. They might not have the same flaws as sisters, but they got their own. Anyway, he did end up marrying sisters, but he said the only reason he married his sister because he said she gives him, she knows when to give him his space and give him his peace of mind.
You know what? That's one thing that sometimes irritates me about men. They'll say, oh, because all black women do this. And it's like, that's just something that women do.
Oh, I would generally agree with you. I've actually gotten into debates here on this very show when I've had guests of both genders. I've had, like, a lot of men who would generalize about sisters, or I've had women who would generalize about brothers. And I always tell people, it's very few qualities. Matter of fact, I did a show called Valid versus Invalid Generalizations. There's very few cases where you could legitimately say that all black women do this or all black men do this. It's you might in some be able to say over 50% of them do this, but you can never say all do this or all do that or all don't do this or all don't do that.
You're right.
And so I agree with you. I hate when people do say all this.
Wait, can I go back to Smitty? I want to go back to Smitty. How was your not paying on dates? How was that received?
Honestly, I really don't care how she receives it. I'm just laying out how I operate. If she doesn't like it, she can date somebody else.
Okay, lay out your program. I talked to you. Were you listening when I said that earlier? I made that comment earlier. I was telling Deanna.
But that's
not
the question. The question is, how is it received?
Honestly, I have a question. I got a quick story about my sister. But the thing is, some women are cool with that because I hear so many women talk about independent. I like independent women because they're going to pay their own way. But, you know, the thing is, some of them like it, some of them don't.
But
some
do you find that you have a better relationship with the independent women?
Oh, I'm not looking for a relationship with marriage or kids.
Oh, okay. You just looking to kick it. Got it.
Yeah.
That makes a difference.
Yeah, I'm not looking for marriage. I don't desire for marriage. Get rid of legal mumbo jumbo, and I may give it a shot. But the thing is, I talk to my sister. Like my sister, she's married. So they got three boys. It's like they live in Atlanta, so when I fly home from Phoenix to visit my family in Alabama, drive to see her. You know, my brother-in-law, he proposed to her in 6 months. She cooks. She does all that stuff. Mind you, she's making $70,000 a year. Also, and she loves being a mom. But the thing is, she's peaceful. They talk everything out. And like he should have wanted the malls there to pick up some stuff while going out. They would. And he was just happy to come home. He rushes home. He wants to be there. And I don't see the thing is the reason why a lot of men may cheat with some mud ducks. It ain't because of looks. It's because of that peace. And that wanting to be there, it's like Superman with the Fortress of Solitude. He has that place where he's peaceful because men, we don't ask for much. And one quick thing I tell women is also, when you and your man get into an argument, he's going to talk about it later, he ain't blowing you off. He just wants to cool down and talk to you by 10, 15 minutes so you can talk and be reasonable. When you're not saying something you may not mean.
I got to ask you, man, I know a lot of stuff becomes viral on Facebook. Have you seen this thing? It was the funniest shit I've seen not the funniest, but it was one of the funniest to do with dating relationships. It's a picture of this white woman, and she's at the edge of the couch, and it has her diary. And it's like this two paragraph long, she's like, you know, he's not acting the same. I think our relationship might be in trouble.
He's
not responding to my question. And it's just this really detailed, like she's like thinking they're on the verge of divorcing or breaking up or whatever. And she's like, you know, essentially like, why is he acting this way? Then it says, his diary, my motorcycle wouldn't start. I can't figure it out.
That's why the hell is funny.
It adds some realness to that because a lot of women will do that. They'll overreact to like some stuff that like, why is he not talking as much? And it kind of relates to what you was talking about, how you might tell a woman, let's talk about that later, and she might have a reaction, but you just might be busy at that moment, and you're like, I want to talk about that shit later.
Yeah, you know what, Alan, because he bangles with me, I have a temper. I could blow off a handle. So that's why I said, let me cool down for a bit. Let me, you know, get me some red berries to rock and pink lemonade in him a little bit, you know. Let me cool down. And we'll
see,
talk about
see,
it.
He likes to drink when he's talking about relationships.
Hey, you know, but see, the thing is, I feel like no one can reason when you're angry. I feel like let both people cool down first, and let's talk about it so we both can be reasonable, sound-minded people.
Hey, now, I don't want to give Deanna the big head, but you resonate with my listening audience, Deanna, because since my new season started, my new fall season, I've never had this many people in my chat room 2 hours.
Hey, when, folks.
Number one, I normally don't go. I think this is the first time I'm going on 2 hours for this season. But it's 35-plus people in my chat room.
Hey.
Yeah, good.
So they enjoy this discussion. But thank you, T-Smith.
They enjoy the book.
Yeah.
No problem,
oh, we know she's going
to
plug her book again. Just go ahead. Go ahead, Deanna. Bless your heart. Go ahead and plug the book.
Yay! Single Girl Summer, available on Amazon. You can download it to your Kindle for $4.99. Makes the perfect gift. Guys, you can buy the book for your sister or your lady friend or your wife. Actually, guys are like my secondary. I found that that's like my secondary target because they like to buy it and give it for a gift. And then their girlfriend's like, oh, my gosh, you brought me a book. It's so thoughtful. You'll get so many points. So buy Single Girl Summer.
Well, since we have extended, I'm going to take another about 3.5-4 minute intermission break so my guests can get a swig of water. But I see a number of people, damn, in my phone queue. Not all of you want to talk, but it's a number of people. So y'all fill in the conversation. If somebody else wants to call in, 646-478-5710. Again, I'm going to take about 3.5 to 4 minute intermission break, but I real... Before I go to this intermission break, I want an encore of Mo.
Well, first I want to say thanks to Smitty. He was very interesting.
Oh, yeah. T. Smitty is he's a charismatic brother.
And we're going to take an intermission, and then we'll come back to talk to Alan Roger Curry, author of Mode 1.
Alan Roger Curry.
You're up front and straightforward.
Alan Roger Curry.
Mo 1.
Listeners, I'll be right back.
Hey, I'm Dangerous Lee. And you may have read my short story, Till Death Do Us Part, in the New York Times best-selling anthology, Succulent, Chocolate Flavor 2, presented by Bang. Well, things get even hotter between the pages of Keep Your Panties Up and Your Skirt Down. Check it out at PantiesUpSkirtDown.com. And remember, keep it dangerous.
What's up, folks? This is Alan Roger Curry of Upfront and Straightforward and Mode 1 fame. And if you're a music lover, I urge you to listen to Madison Media Radio. It's not just music, but it is music with a purpose. Right here on the Blog Talk Radio, Internet Radio Network.
Mode 1.
We'll be right back.
that guys, to one degree or another, have to play the role of the bad boy to attract women, or they just need to remain who they are and just, you know, be patient?
No, they need to combine their game. They need to go in with an attitude that I'm going to be a gentleman, but I'm also letting you know that I'm attracted to you. You know, I want to kiss you. I want to hold you. I want to, you know, I want to take you out. I want to date you. You know, if you think I want to get in your pants, you're probably right. But at the same time, I like you. I like you. I want to see you.
You know, there's more single women than married women in the United States.
Oh, really?
It's only 51%. Yeah.
There's more what?
Okay.
There's more single women than married women in the United States right now. First time ever in history.
Mindset is correct. Somewhere there's a woman that's balanced, that's God-focused, that's, you know, she gives because she wants to give, not because she's trying to hook somebody with her giving, but she values herself. She recognizes her good qualities, acknowledges her bad qualities, and this is the person that's balanced and ready to be in a healthy relationship.
Just so listeners know, there's a letter in my first book, Letters to a Young Brother, Manifest Your Destiny. It's called Finding Your Swagger. In fact, it's so funny. I just got a letter from a young brother that he read my book, and it's changed his life. And he also put it in, and he said, and you know what? I found my swagger, and now all the girls like me like he said they would. I was so tickled by that, yeah.
Oh, man, you gotta love it. Single, lonely, confused, join me. I invite you to listen to the most informative and entertaining talk radio show on the internet for single men and single women looking to enhance their social lives, love lives, and or sex lives. Get on the phone right now and tell one or two of your single friends to listen to Upfront and Straightforward with yours truly, Alan Roger Curry, Thursday evenings at 10 p.m. Eastern, 9 p.m. Central, and 7 p.m. on the West Coast, right here on the Blog Talk Radio Internet Radio Network. We now return to my interview with up-and-coming novelist Deanna Kimberly Burrell on Upfront and Straightforward with Alan Roger Curry right here on the Blog Talk Radio Internet Radio Network. Welcome back. Welcome back to tonight's episode of Upfront and Straightforward. And if you're listening to this show live, you're probably tripping because I'm still on the air.
Extended.
And extended. You know, back in the day, a lot of young people won't be related. They used to have certain songs that they say, this is the disco version.
It's the EP.
And you knew that was the extended version of the song. Well, that's what I do every blue moon with my show, because I'd say, with me and my percentages, I'd say probably about 50% of my shows are about an hour and a half. About 45% of my shows are 2 hours. Then I'd say roughly about 5% of my shows have gone past 2 hours. And
ooh,
this is one
5%er
of those. Yep. Deanna is, damn, I got 42 people in my chat room. Wow.
Hey, people.
Get out of here. Let me call out some, well, most of them are guests. But I got Covina, man. I've seen him in my chat room before. Welcome. My boy Glendon, he's still hanging. A lot of guests in the chat room. I got Harry Callahan, my younger cousin. Hype Style is still in the chat room. I got Marina Matteo, Kayla Wright.
Hey.
Kayla White. Noel Murphy, Rachel Johnson, RXM Frazier, and William Reed, who's been here for a while.
You got percentages, though.
But, yeah, see?
50 point.
Deanna's
you got percentage 89.35% of the time.
Yeah, I had a friend. I used to be my roommate when I lived in Los Angeles. His name is David. He said, Alan, I got to ask you a serious question. I'm thinking you're asking something really deep. I said, what? He said, man, what is it with you and these percentages, dude? Like, most guys, if I say, hey, man, you going to club tonight, they just either say, yeah, I'm going, or no, I'm not. You'll be like, man, there's a 72% chance I'm going to the club, but then there's a 28% chance I might just stay in the crib and chill.
And there's a 50% chance of rain.
Yeah, so that's, I don't know, that's part of...
That sounds like the character in my next book, Talks in Percentages.
Oh, that's a character after my own heart. I'm a percentages brother. Okay, now this is funny. Now let's see. Let me see. Erico 305. You are now upfront and straightforward with Alan Roger Curry, and my guest Deanna Kimberly Burrell. What's your question or comment?
Hey, I'm wondering, are you talking to me?
Who's this?
This is R.L. Moore out of Miami, Florida. I was just typing into the queue. Whoever it is, I just got on the line. Who doesn't want to pay to take a good woman out? He just wasn't raised right. I'm trying to figure out who's your daddy.
Oh,
that is outrageous. I've out-earned every man I've dated. I had to come to accept that I will probably out-earn my husband, period, if I ever decide to get married. I'm in the top five women as far as looks on the planet. I'm trying to figure out, and you and somebody talk about they don't want to pay on the front. I'm going to pay for dates. I already know I'm going to pay for dates because I earn way more money than you. But the first date,
well,
I know
you're
planning on showing me what
you
got.
First of all, what's
not
your first name
you go to Applebee's.
What's your first name again?
I'm Rachel.
Rachel. Okay,
yeah.
Rachel. Yeah, no, well, I have mixed feelings on that. On one end, I don't feel like a guy should be just a total quote-unquote cheap ass, but I've seen a lot of guys, and T. Smitty probably has seen a lot of these guys, so this is probably what got him to the place he is now. I've seen a lot of guys, they'll take a woman, say, on 3, 4, 5 days to five-star restaurants, and they don't even get as much as a kiss on the cheek. And that what that leaves guys feeling, see, you guys don't see, the women don't see this side, but this is what happens. Let's say, Rachel, a guy go on you in his fifth date, and he then now spent, say, a total of $300, and you give him what I call the talk. I always talk about the talk in my books and on my show. The talk is when you say, hey, Brian, I really appreciate you taking me to that Prince concert and letting me and my girlfriends fly to Cancun on your frequent flyer miles. But I just have to be honest in saying that I just don't really feel like there's any true romantic or sexual chemistry between us. Now,
just be friends.
You're gonna make someone a great boyfriend, a great husband, but it just unfortunately won't be me. And I hope you're not mad. And then what the guy do? He'll suck it up in your face, and he'll say, "Okay, yeah, that's how it is. That's how it is." Then what happens? Y'all leave pretty amicably, whatever. Mispronounced. Then he'll call me if I'm saying this boy. He'll call me at 1:30 in the morning. Be like, Al, dude, man, remember Rachel I told you about? Yeah, fine, babe, I met her at one place. Man, she's a bitch, man. Be like, dude, what's
get
up, man?
Out.
I'm sleeping.
Listen.
Dude. No, man, I paid for her and her girlfriend to go to Cancun.
Okay, well,
I took her to the Prince concert.
I'm not asking him to be.
Right.
Cut it. I'm not asking nobody to be a sucker. Okay, be gullible.
Don't tell me. Dad, I just want to be friends with you,
Rachel,
man.
Rachel, Alan has gone to the left.
He's tripping. Because here's
the
thing.
I'm exaggerating a little bit for entertainment effect, but I've had guys literally call me, sometimes middle of the night, talking about some woman that they spent a bunch of money on, and they didn't get as much of a good handshake after the third, fourth, or fifth date.
But he couldn't tell after the second date that she wasn't feeling him.
Wait,
after the first date.
On date one, if you take me out And I have, and we have $100 dinner, $100 on me, $100 on you, drinks, appetizers, the whole nine, whatever. We hang out 3 hours. Trust me, if you never see me again, you're gonna, that time you spent with those 3 hours, that was already well worth it. So you're gonna benefit from the time. You don't have to get nothing extra. We don't have to go to the hotel. If somebody is a good woman, she's smart, she's valuable, she's contributing to adding something to your life, the conversation alone was probably worth it if you were with me. If it wasn't, then you don't go on a second date and go big budget. And secondly, if you don't have it, don't spend it.
Don't do it.
Exactly.
Yeah. That's
out here.
Don't go to Big Baller and then get mad about it.
I agree with
take
that.
The girl.
That's one thing
where
I would say. I agree. I'm on you guys' side. Because I tell guys that. I say, man, you should never spend no big money on a woman if you haven't established that she is not for sure interested in you and you guys don't for sure have chemistry. I never do that shit, ever. I say that in my book. I don't do no big balling, wine and dining with no woman. I usually don't actually only do that when I'm in a relationship. That's the only time a woman going to get the what I call the big balling treatment. And when you my woman, or at least if you're not my woman, we done been fucking for a while and we just got great chemistry, yeah, you'll get the big balling. But if I'm just like saying I'm early stages getting to know you, no, you ain't going to get no big balling.
Right, so that's on him.
Yeah.
That's on her
too, because she took advantage, but you should have known better.
Oh, yeah,
I agree.
I tell guys. I say, that's your fault. Because, you know, matter of fact, one of those examples you might have thought was a joke, but I actually had a guy I talked to. He actually, this was really stupid. I told him when he was about to do it, it was stupid. He had a woman he was digging on. Now, she was physically, she was drop-dead gorgeous. He was just, I guess, enamored by looks. She talked him into paying not only for her trip, but she brought like one or two girlfriends to Cancun. They didn't even allow him to go with them. He's thinking he earning brownie points. He's like, oh shit, I know when she get back, I'm in there.
Probably married.
And then I said, dude, within a week when she come back, you gonna get to talk. And he's like, of course, no, man, it ain't gonna happen. Sure enough, about 4 or 5 days after, her and her girlfriends had fun in the sun again. Cause she's like, we need to talk. And she gave him the whole spiel, almost just like I described. Like, you know, you'd be a really great boyfriend to somebody, but we just don't have chemistry. Guys, some guys do stupid shit like that. But, Rachel, I got a couple more calls I want to attend to. Is there any other questions or comments you have?
No, man. Thanks for having me on. This is my first time listening in. I was only on for about 10 minutes,
welcome.
But I was on long
this
enough.
This your first time listening in?
Yeah.
Well, I always love new listeners, so I'm glad you joined me tonight on Upfront and Straightforward with Alan Roger Curry. God bless
okay,
you.
Okay, and I'm going to grab the book. I'm going to grab the book.
Oh, please, thank you. Tell your
all
friends.
All right, girl. Bye-bye.
All right, girl. Bye.
And Rachel, see?
I like
see,
Rachel.
See, Deanna, you cold. You plugged your book, but I want Rachel to tell her single heterosexual male friends about mode
got,
one.
Got
let
to tell
the women know what you're really thinking. And the title of my next book that's about to drop is Ooh, Say It Again. Ooh, I like the way Deanna says it.
Say It Again.
Yeah, that's hot. Yeah, it's called Ooh, Say It Again, Mastering the Fine Art of Verbal Seduction and Oral, A-U-R-A-L, Sex. I got 111. You're now Upfront and Straightforward with Alan Roger Curry. I don't see Erica. It just says 111.
Yeah, Alan, this is me again.
Oh, this is Richard again.
Yeah.
Okay.
Hey, look here. I just want to make the comment. T. Smitty touched up on it, but those are the two biggest impediments to communication. Who asks whom out, and, of course, who pays. Now, you know, I recommend a walk in the park and a bottle of water. I think we equivocate too much. I think we're very, very, we lack a method on early meeting or what I call stranger meeting. And that's why I've been on a couple of dates lately, and they were wonderful dates. But the woman paid. She paid for her share. And I would not accept a woman paying for me unless I wanted to go out with her again, which means that I would reciprocate. But I think we need to, you know, develop
a model here, and the model, I say, is the walk in the park and the bottle of water in order to enhance communication. And
sure.
I would like
you,
to know what Deanna...
I agree. Or you could do a nice coffee date, you know, let's meet for a cup of coffee. That's inexpensive, and then you don't have alcohol also coloring the conversation and the personalities. So I don't mind that either, because I get it. It's expensive to go out. You don't know me. You don't know if you want to sit through 2 hours of dinner and drinks with me. So, hey, yeah, let's Saturday afternoon, Sunday afternoon, let's meet for a cup of coffee.
Right, or a workout date. I think those are excellent ways to get to know each other, you know, where you meet each other on the track and you walk for an hour or so.
You know what, I think that's a great idea, too. When you said workout date, I was like, go to the gym and work out. But, yeah, if it's a nice day, I like the idea of going for a walk. I think those are great ideas. I'm all for that.
Yeah, and as I said, I look for means to enhance communication instead of the game playing, particularly for those who are more who are mature and don't want to play the game, because there's going to be a loser and a waste of time when the game is being played.
But I'm going to follow up and say that if you go, you know, for the short and expensive date, for the first date, the second date does need to be a dinner. Don't take me on another inexpensive date, because then I'm going to start looking at you side-eye like, really?
Yeah, but if you're not a girlfriend or a wife, a guy doesn't owe a woman dinner. Mm. I don't mind the guy paying when he gets to know the woman, but before she's a wife or a girlfriend, she shouldn't be parasiting.
I might have a few exceptions to this, but I generally agree with you, Richard. That's what I was saying when Rachel was on the line. I can only speak for myself, and everybody has their own preferences. I don't pay for, big money dates. Like, you know, if I'm taking a woman, say, to the movie, I ain't no big deal. But what I've usually done with women is before I even go out with them, usually, period, I talk to them on the phone probably anywhere from 2 to 5 times minimum. And I can usually tell if me and a woman have chemistry just by our phone conversation. And if I feel like our chemistry is, say, lukewarm to almost non-existent, she don't even get a date that requires money.
Right. You get the, I'm coming over.
Yeah,
let's come
over
and watch a movie. But I want to point out that men in America, on average, make more than women. And I used to complain about that, you know, women's lib equality. But then I realized that when I go out on dates, I expect a man to pay. And that's why men make more money than women, on average.
Well, my comment to that would be, and I understand what you're saying, and it's because of choices that women make. They tend not to do they tend not to work at jobs strictly for money, whereas men do. But besides that,
some of it. But there are some instances where there are a lot of instances where men and women have the same education, same tenure, same job, but the man is making more money because it's assumed that we're in a patriarchal society, that man has a family, has to support other people, so men make more money.
Right, but I worked in that field, by the way, for quite a number of years. If you can prove that, you win. If you take that to EEOC or any employment attorney, you win. That's usually not the case. That's usually not the case because the woman has the right to negotiate her salary. But what I wanted to say is because men may earn more money does not mean that a strange woman deserves it. And so I think if men and women want to have, enhanced communication to get to know each other, then we need to let money and money spending be at a minimum, because see, you don't want to be a purchased product. And I say women shouldn't have sex. I've also said, just like you don't want a man, or just like a woman, rather, doesn't want a man to bend her over and take advantage of her, a man doesn't want a woman to bend him over and take advantage of his wallet. But once you become a girlfriend or a wife, you know, then things change. You should still be a fair person.
But how do I know that I want to be your girlfriend or wife if I don't know that you can, that you're meeting my financial needs? Or that I don't know if you never pay for a date, then I don't know if you can, that you fulfill my financial criteria. So that's why I have a problem with that.
Yeah, I didn't say never, but see, the point of it is you communicate early, you communicate early on, and if you have some concerns about finances, you can ask the guy. And if he's a mature guy, if you've made a good selection, he'll tell you. So it's not like you have to sneak around and stealthily pick a man's pocket. You can just ask a man how he feels about.
Well, I think I disagree with the way that you're categorizing it, that women are essentially saying women are parasites and they're picking a man's pocket. When I loved Rachel's point earlier that if you go out on a date with me, you're going to have a good time, you're going to have a good conversation, you're going to be entertained.
But that's mutual,
you're gonna have
though.
My
you
time.
Should be enjoying the guy.
I don't see anything wrong with expecting men to pay on a date. And I don't go out with men that don't pay. Or if I do go and you don't pay, we're not going out again. That's my bottom line.
So you say, Brianna, you've never gone Dutch?
No. I have, just because it happened that way. But then I was like, okay, obviously this is not a date because you're not paying. So if we're going Dutch, that's cool. But you're in the friend box. You have put yourself in the friend box. And
so
we will go out.
Let me ask you this, Deanna, I got an interesting question. Have you ever asked a guy out and then expected him to pay?
No, because I don't ask men out.
Never ever?
Uh-huh.
Really? That's interesting.
That's a problem.
Because see, with me, I'll be honest, at least one-third of the time that I go out on dates, usually a woman will ask me. And kind of one of my kind of unwritten rules is, if you ask me,
you should pay.
Yeah, exactly.
I agree. But like I said, I don't pay on dates. So that's why I don't ask men out. So I'm not going to ask you out and then be looking at you to pay. If you don't want to take me out, then we shouldn't go.
Yeah, sometimes you just don't need to go out. I mean.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, there's been a lot of limits.
I don't have to go out every night. I'm perfectly fine having a bottle of wine in the house or hanging out with my girlfriends or reading a book. I don't have to go out. If I go out, I made a choice to go out, and I'm going out with a selective person, and I've, screened that person. I feel like we're going to have a good time. I feel like that person's going to have manners, and I think paying on a date shows manners. And you don't have to agree, but that's how I feel.
Manners. I think I've totally destroyed all men's concept of some of the shit I said. Thank you, Richard, for calling in.
Thank you, Richard.
What'd you say, Deanna?
I said thank you, Richard.
Oh, okay.
I disagree with you, but respectfully.
We have had a lot on my show. As long as it don't get too nasty and stuff, y'all just kind of had like a philosophical disagreement. Now, I got a few more questions, and I'm not going to hold you all night. I'm going to let you go in a little bit, but we did do the, go ahead and say it, the extension.
We did the extended play. That's the EP version.
That's right. Now, elaborate on this comment by the character Megan. Love and weddings are easy. Marriage is hard. A marriage is the joining of two people and their individual desires, goals, lifestyles, and experiences. And those two people have to constantly work at balancing their individuality into a harmonious union.
Mm.
What are some of your further thoughts on that?
Who wrote that? That's good shit.
That's the shit right there.
That's good shit. Marriage is hard. And actually, I'm on the Six Brown Chicks, and we tape webisodes on CIU. And I had a topic, should Kim Kardashian give back the ring? And Yanni, my Pisces soul sister, she said, planning the wedding was the fun part, and that was the easy part, but they didn't plan for the marriage, And I was like, yeah, exactly, because it's easy to get married, and it's easy to think about, oh, gosh, my whole life I've wanted to get married, and I've got this whole wedding planned in my mind. I'm going to wear this princess dress, and I'm going to come in on a horse and carriage and blah, blah, blah. But you're not thinking about, okay, when we come together, have we discussed our finances? Are we comfortable with each other's families? That's a big thing that causes a lot of problems. Your mother doesn't like me, or I don't like blah, blah, blah. Am I okay not going to see my parents in Dallas on Christmas, because we have to go to your family, wherever, have you discussed all these different things when you're bringing two lives together? And everything's not going to be easy, and you're not going to be able to agree with everything, but just like you were just saying about the last caller, you know, do you discuss it in a way that's respectful? Is there a give and pull by both people? Can you come to some type of agreement? And that's where sometimes it just breaks down. So
now, if you don't mind me asking, how long were you married?
A few years.
She said a few years. You know, that was polite way of saying none of your damn business. Now, what would you say if you had to narrow down to just three lessons based on your marriage? What are two to three lessons you learned that you would be able to, that you think would help you in a future marriage?
You have the ladies on that talked about the red flags. You know, paying attention to the red flags and not sweeping them under the carpet, that's really, really important. And then just making sure that you guys communicate in a way that you feel comfortable, you know, that he's being honest with you and you're being honest with him, that you believe what he says and what he says and what he does match up, and vice versa. I'm saying he, but I mean it for both sides. And the third, definitely be with someone that is your friend, not just someone that makes you all hot and bothered, but someone that you enjoy talking to and enjoy spending time with, because you're going to be with that person hopefully a really long time. And
okay,
if you can't have peace around that person, that peace you're talking about, mm-hmm, you're going to be unhappy.
Okay. Well, number one, all of those are good feedback. I agree definitely with all, even though I've never been married, but just based on both my experiences in relationships and close friends of mine. Yeah, honesty and communication. I wrote a freelance article about that. That is just key.
Mm-hmm.
That's key to any relationship. Because I tell women that I date, one of my kind of, you could say, mantras that I live by, I always would prefer real, raw truth, even harsh, real, raw truth that's unpleasant to my ears than a pleasant lie.
Because
once a woman lies to me, I'll be honest, that pretty much, that's the first nail in the coffin of our relationship. I've ended relationships just simply based on dishonesty.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, once I see a pattern of dishonesty, I can't continue, because you're no longer credible.
Right. I don't know who you are.
It's like, for example, if you were to say I love you, but I know you'd be lying, then I love you don't mean shit no more then.
Right.
And communication, that's what most of my first book is about, is just great interpersonal communication. I think too many times people worry about, you know, hurting somebody's feelings or how it might be received. I just said my thing is you just say what you got to say, and then you take it from there. But now the third thing begs me to a question, because I've seen problems kind of on both extremes with the kind of balance between friendship and hot, sizzling sexual chemistry. I think if you have too much of either, it can actually be detrimental to the relationship.
I've seen couples put out the fire,
break up because they were almost too much like a platonic friend. And then I've seen other relationships break up because all they pretty much had was good sex.
Right.
So what would be Deanna's ideal, I'm going to ask you for percentages.
My percentage split.
What's your ideal percentage balance between quality friendship between partners and hot, sizzling sex?
Alan, you ask some tough questions.
Ooh,
really,
I
make
love
me...
it. Ooh, you got to say that again.
Alan, you ask some tough questions. You do. I don't want to just give a cliche 50-50, because I think that, which one, which one, which one, what works?
You're not giving me a diplomatic 50-50. That means that you're going to choose something where one is more important than the other. So which one would you lean to?
I'm going to say the hot romance is more important, but I'm going to give it like a 60-40 split. It's not – I'm not going to do one of your 85-90%. So I'm going to say 60% hot. You look at that person, your pulse quickens. You know, you get flustered when you kiss them, when you embrace them, when you have sex. You have that passion.
Oh, you said my key word. That's my second favorite P word, of course, next to pussy. Passion. Passion. No, you got
to
have that.
To
I
have
actually
that.
Agree with that percentage.
Especially if you're saying that this is going to be a monogamous relationship, you have to have that passion to choose that person and not stray to other people. So I'm going to say 60-40.
Yeah, I like that because, matter of fact, in my upcoming book, I say there's a section where I talk about sexual chemistry, and you just alluded to this. I say sexual chemistry is even that much more important for a long-term monogamous relationship than is casual. When you deal with somebody short-term and casual, you can get away with having erratic sexual chemistry or sexual chemistry that might be questionable because you ain't really going to be staying with. But when you're talking about staying with somebody, say, 15, 20, 25, 30 years.
What do they say in the vows and choose this person and all other people asunder or something? I can't remember the phrasing is. If you're going to not be with anybody else, you really, really, really got to want to be with the person you're with.
Yeah, because I always half-lightheartedly, half-seriously tell female friends, because, of course, I have female friends, say, Ellen, when you get married, what type of woman, what does a woman have to have? I say, at minimum, two things. She got to know how to cook some chicken wings, because I love me some chicken wings.
Fried?
Huh? Fried, grilled, whatever.
Okay.
Baked, it can be any version.
Okay. You flexible.
Yeah, because I love, you don't know this about me yet, but everybody, all my listeners know, I'm even, believe it or not, even internationally, people know that I love chicken wings.
Okay.
So if I was to meet a woman, she could have everything else going for me. If she ain't into chicken wings, I got to pass. And she got to be verbally kinky. I can't deal with no verbal prude. But that relates to, for me to say, that's the pilot light, you know, that gets the furnace going. You got to have that. And yeah, if a woman's a verbal prude, oh, man, I can. But, yeah, I like that 60-40 because that's a good, nice balance, I would say, for a long term. Because, again, I find when a relationship is, say, 90% friendship, 10% emphasis on sex, it don't work because – because I've heard women, both women and men, they'll say to me, yeah, I almost feel like he's my brother or my son now.
Right.
And, yeah, as a man, you never want to reach a point where a woman starts looking at you as a brother or a son.
Mm-hmm.
And same with on the man's end. Man, you know, a woman don't want to be looked at as a sister or a mother or a daughter. So then on the flip side, like I said, if it's all about sex, it ain't like you're going to be fucking in a relationship 24/7.
You ain't getting nothing else done.
Yeah, so at some point, you got to just, like, sit down and watch TV and talk.
Yeah, there's no wealth
there
building.
Like,
there's no progress, emotional, and, you know, yeah.
Matter of fact, Hill Harper, who I had on my show twice, very sharp, intelligent brother. Listeners, if you don't know, Hill Harper's on CSI New York. I think he's the only main black character on that show. But he talked about, when he was on my show the second time, he talked about how when you get up in age, that's when he said he, because for his second book, he said he observed a lot of older couples.
Mm.
And, of course, you know, when you get older, I mean, there's still some older couples that be fucking, but I mean, fucking just diminishes when you get to your 70s and 80s and shit. And he said he noticed that one important key was being able to make each other laugh and just have good, you know, entertaining conversation.
Like this. Good, entertaining conversation.
Oh, check out here, man. What? Man, let's see something else, man. You can make chicken wings, man.
Ah, we might have something to talk about, huh?
Do do you think most women are, there was mention in your book of kissing frogs, you know, that's used lightheartedly in a lot of stories. Do you think most women are willing to kiss some frogs before they find their handsome prince?
You know, there is, in talking to different people, I have found that there is, I'm going to say about 25% of women that are not kissing any frogs. They go to work, and after work, they go home, and they may cook some dinner, and they sit on the couch, and they watch TV, and they don't have a social life. And they've been burned by, you know, some guy, and they, you know, can't get over it, won't get over it, and they don't want to try. But it's a startling high percentage. I'm going to say about 25%.
Okay. Well, I've seen the, it's funny because I've seen the same thing on the mail end. And then finally, this probably be my final question for the night before I let you just go on to.
I know.
Well,
I've got mixed emotions. I don't.
Ooh, say Alan Roger Curry, I don't want it to end.
Alan Roger Curry, I don't want it to end. Ooh, we're having so much fun.
Okay, well, I can ask you two or three more questions that I want. Now, but this definitely, I gotta ask you, because just like this whole team thing caught my attention when I read it, the part, and wait a minute, I want to pull it up so I don't misquote anything, because I got a thing for list and stuff. I like list and I like rankings and that type of thing, and I know the exact page number. It is page 73. Oh, look at you trying to get in my mind. Don't you be doing no Inception type Matrix stuff, getting in my mind, predicting my pages and stuff. Ain't that something? On page 73, listeners, in Deanna, I just love saying her whole name, Deanna Kimberly Burrell book. It says the 10 essential elements of marriage. And it's funny because six of them are non-negotiable. And then four of them, I guess, are negotiable. So I want to more so probably end up asking about those four that are negotiable. But I'm going to read it off if the author doesn't mind. Her 10. Now, is this one particular character's? I think
this
it's
is Megan's list.
Oh,
Megan's
list.
The divorce character.
Okay.
This is, she's been married, she's divorced, so this is what she's learned from her marriage. So she,
okay, well, I'm going to have either a question or comment to do with each of them, so let's go down the list. Love. Now, Deanna, what is your, because that's such a, what I want to say, kind of like an abstract, esoteric term. What is your definition of love?
Love. I mean, that goes back to that idea of that passion. I just thought of it, forsaking all others. When you find that person for you, you know, you call it your soulmate or whatever, but when you are with that person, you see that person, your heart quickens and you lose your breath. Like, you all click. That's love. And you elevate that person above all others.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That was good. Number two, God is the head of our household. What is Deanna's distinction between being religious and being spiritual?
That's becoming fuzzier and fuzzier every day. I think that people say that they're religious if they say they're religious if they go to church regularly, and then people that don't go to church but they believe in Christ or believe in whatever God or deity, they say that they're spiritual. So I think that when people say they're religious, they like subscribe to some type of organized religion. That I think that's my personal distinction. Even though I go to church, but I say that I'm spiritual.
Yeah, I tend to think of myself as more spiritual than religious. Real quickly before I continue the list, I want to give kudos to two people my younger cousin for sticking around all 3 hours from Detroit, Christopher Curry.
We like
number,
the party.
Yeah, I have a number of guests, probably a lot of your fans that's been in here for a long time. And then on my phone queue, my main man, Irvin V. Pulliam, the third, EVP3, whose mother, boy, she makes, I always brag about her, peach cobbler. Oh, my God. She gave me some before Thanksgiving. Lord have mercy. And matter of fact, he's been writing me little comments about you, Deanna. He's enjoying the conversation. So aww. EVP3, Hype Style, much love to you, too. Now, going back to the list, why did I lose my list all of a sudden? Where'd my list go? Oh, there it is. Companionship. Now, that seems kind of general. What do you mean when you just say companionship?
That's that 40% friendship.
Oh, like kind of the friendship thing. Okay.
You get along. You enjoy being around the person. Because I know some couples, they don't like being around each other.
Oh, trust me. I met those. Yeah. And you know, doesn't that kind of blow your mind? Because you're like, especially
crazy.
If they're married, because you're like, okay, you guys are husband and wife, but you can't stand to be around each other.
And you couldn't stand to be around them before you got married. Like, it was not a new development. You knew that going in.
Yeah.
But you really wanted to be married, so.
I had a woman tell me that probably about, not recently, but it must have been maybe 4 or 5 years now. This woman told me she wasn't getting along with her husband, and we were talking. And I said, so you fell out of love with him? And she said, oh, no, I knew I wasn't really in love with him when we got married. And, of course, that was a big question mark on my end. I was like, okay, why'd you get married? She said, because I was at that age. She said my parents was bugging me, and I was about, you know, 36, 37. I felt like it was time. So I went ahead and married a guy. But she said, I knew as I was taking my saying my vows, she said, I knew I wasn't in love with him.
Mm.
And I was like, that is just.
That's a dose of reality.
That's matter of fact, I got to plug a movie for particularly for my male listeners. You've heard me talk about this on the show once or twice. You got to see this movie called Blue Valentine with Ryan Gosling and the woman who used to be married to Heath
Michelle?
Ledger.
Michelle
Williams.
Yeah.
They both got nominated for Golden Globes and she got nominated for Oscar. Man, most romantic dramas are usually kind of honestly skewed towards the female audience. But man, every man needs to watch Blue Valentine. That movie, woo! Did you see it?
No, but I wanted to see it now. I definitely want to see it.
Oh, that movie's heavy duty. Heavy. It relates to what we were just talking about. That's heavy duty movie right there. Heavy duty movie. I mean, that's one of the most real movies you will ever see. Number four, good communication on everyday small things and big picture long-term goals. Words and action. Ooh, man, this woman, she.
Don't just talk about it.
You're trying to leave an indelible impression on me. Words and actions must match.
That's
right. If I haven't said that phrase or a variation of that phrase like 2 million times.
If you had a dollar.
Because that's what I always tell people. One thing I tell people all the time, I say, I can't stand people who, sometimes I can tell within 5 to 10 minutes of talking to somebody if they're just full of shit. And, you know, people sometimes, some of my friends say, yeah, I think you're too harsh in that regard. How do you know somebody's full? I said, the only way you know when somebody's full of shit is when their words and their actions just don't match.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, a simple example would be like somebody who's saying, they want to be healthy, they want to lose weight, but as they're saying that, they're eating a triple cheeseburger and a hot fudge sundae. You automatically know that person's full of shit. And some people just can't see that as easily, I guess, as I do. But anyway, I like that. Trust, of course, Biggie. I don't even need to ask you a question on that. That's just self-explanatory. Listener says, trust, our relationship has integrity and honesty. Yeah, that's definitely non-negotiable. Six, another one that's pretty self-explanatory. We're committed to making the marriage work and we'll put in the work. Yeah, a lot of people think when they get married, they can just put stuff on autopilot. And then
we married now.
Yeah, that And that ends up being your first fatal mistake. Ain't no autopilot marriages. Now we get to the last four, and these are these first six I read off have non-negotiable in the next to them, but the next four don't. Well, I want to say a quick toot my horn plug. This is already of the 2011-2012 season. My most listened, I've seen the preliminary numbers, my most listened to episode by
Woo!
My listeners. Thank you, listeners, for supporting Upfront and Straightforward with Alan Roger Curry. I'm going to give like 62.8% of credit, of course, to myself. I think I'm a charming host. And then I'm going to give like 37.8% to Deanna Kimberly Burrell, because evidently she's saying something that's resonated with listeners. Now,
or she just sent out a lot of Facebook posts asking people to listen.
Yeah, we were Facebooking.
They were like, oh, yeah, we want to listen to her. She's full of shit.
what she's not telling you, because she's too blushing to tell you. But see, she had told some of her girlfriends, she said, I actually listened to some of Alan's previous shows, and he's nasty. He's going to make me say a bunch of nasty stuff and make me talk real, real nasty to him. And see, I've been mostly PG-13 for probably 78.3% of the conversation. But number seven is, see, I ain't had to talk about, you know, playing with a pussy and nothing like that. Number seven is physically satisfying. That is negotiable. Now, I assume that's the formal way of just saying good fucking.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Now, how negotiable is good fucking?
This, okay, first of all, this is the characters list. This is
I need to clarify that. This is not Deanna's list. This is
right.
The character of Megan within the context of Singer Girl Summer, because Megan is the one that's been divorced. So I guess she's writing this list because she's learned, just like I was asking you what lessons you learned.
Right.
These are the lessons she's learned from her marriage that didn't work out.
Right. And so she feels like, and they have, you know, she goes over this list and they discuss it later, and I think Button is the one that's like, that needs to be, well, how is that not, you know, how is that not a non-negotiable? And she says, this is my list. Your list is going to be different. But for her, it would be great if she had it, but if she meets a great guy that has all the six non-negotiables, if everything's not perfect in the bedroom, she can work with it.
Okay, good finances and good financial sense.
Right, because it's not enough to just have good finances if you don't know what the hell you're doing with them. So, good financial sense.
Now, it's funny that this list on here, these are number seven and number eight, but in actuality, in real life, these are the two most leading causes of divorce.
Mm-hmm.
They say that the two top causes of divorce is something either sexual-related or something money-related.
That's interesting.
Yeah. Number nine is good family dynamic. We both want to have children and coexist harmoniously in each other's existing families.
Right.
Yeah, I think you mentioned that earlier. You got to not only get along with each other well, but the woman has to get along with the man's family. The man has to get along with the woman's family.
And especially now in this day and age, we have these different extended families where, you know, someone could have children from other marriages or other relationships. Are you okay with that? Do you get along with the mothers and the fathers? You know, there's so many different dynamics. So does that work for you?
Okay, I got to give a quick thing. Listeners, who's ever still listening in the chat room, you, in about 1 minute, you are not going to be able to hear the live portion. I apologize. Blog Talk Radio will not allow any host to do a show live that's more than 3 hours.
Oh.
And
so you will
be able to catch whatever we say over the next, say, 5 minutes. You'll be able to catch it on what's called the Archive Podcast. Within, I want to say, 2 to 3 hours after I complete the live show, it becomes an archive podcast that you can click on and listen to. But, yeah, right now they're about to cut off the live portion. So once they cut off, you'll be able to hear the from that point to the end of the show on the Archive podcast. So thank you so much for those listening live. I appreciate it. This is the most live listened to show of my 2011-2012 season. And I thank you. I thank you. And so, you know, join me next week, Corey Jenkins. But anyway, back to this list and Deanna. Finally, we work as a team by being open and receptive to new ideas. We grow individually and together.
Mm-hmm. Because it's important not to get lost, not to lose your identity in someone else. So you're still doing what you need to grow, but also that you can come together.
Hmm.
It's tough. It is not for the faint of heart.
Well, again, I've never been married, but I know just based on...
But you've been in a relationship.
The experiences of my... Yeah, I've been in definitely... I was actually... Well, I don't even want to get into that. About my last long-term relationship. But, okay, well, I, you know, it's funny. I actually have a whole page and a half worth of more questions. But I'm just going to now let you go into what I call the plug zone. And you tell my listening audience what's coming up, like maybe a book signing event, some kind of workshop. What's coming up on Deanna Kimberly Burrell's plate?
I do have a book signing. I'm not sure of the details, though, but I am working on some book signings. But you can find out everything that I'll be doing on the website, singlegirlsummer.com. I have an events section. So I'm just trying to get the word out. The book makes the perfect holiday gift. Give it to your girlfriends. You know, feature it for your book club. Like I said, guys love to give it to their female friends. So, you know, just help me spread the word. You can like Single Girl Summer on Facebook. Check out the website. And then also with the Six Brown Chicks, if you go to WCIU.com and search Six Brown Chicks, you can see our different webisodes. We do daily blogs also, so if you like it on Facebook.
Oh,
yeah.
Man, you know, see, I was going to let you go, but I get now you brought up Six Brown Chicks again. I just got to take 2 minutes to take a jab at you women.
Ah.
And I'm familiar with half your crew because me and Gina B, we used to go at it sometimes.
It's funny,
I have yet to meet her in person, but she knows my frat Jeff, who you also know.
Yeah.
And I used to read her column. She used to have these columns in the Red Eye in the Chicago Tribune.
Yeah.
And so probably two-thirds or three-fourths of columns I would usually agree with, but she always had at least 20-25% stuff she write. Oh man, I would disagree with it. Like, she wrote one article I remember that I disagree with. She basically tried to say that when a woman starts acting like Glenn Close in Fatal Attraction, that it's the man's fault. And I was like, no, if a bitch crazy, she crazy.
You know what? You actually said that earlier. You said that when a man is not honest with a woman, that's when she goes crazy and starts doing stuff to your car and blah, blah, blah. I don't remember the article, but I think that's probably the point that she was making, that men can make you go a little crazy.
Look at me, I'm trying to put me in my place on one show. You're a piece of wisdom, man.
You double talking.
Okay, yeah, okay. I did say that earlier in the show.
You said it.
Well, yeah, I how I put that is, as a man, you can't attract bad karma. But where that's different, though, than, say, using Fatal Attraction as an example.
But I'm not going to say there aren't some crazies out there.
I've never condoned or encouraged any guy, and this is again goes back to my whole Mo 1 philosophy. I don't believe in misleading women about shit. I don't believe in toying with their emotions. So, for example, I'm the type of guy, if I know I just want something casual with a woman, I tell them that up front. I've never been a guy who would say, make a woman believe we got something really serious going on when I know in the back of my mind I just want to fuck.
Right.
That's kind of how the you could say the legend mode one began, first began, because guys would trip on me because I would go up to women, say at a party, and I'd be like, hey, I just want to go with you and just fuck the shit out of you. And they'd be like, oh, my God, what did you just say? And I'd be like, believe it. And then I let them go through that theatric, but then, sure enough, 82.6% of that, we'd end up fucking. And guys are like, damn, so you're telling me you can just be that straightforward, that honest, and get away with it? I'm like, yeah, yeah. If a woman's attracted to you, yeah, you can get away with it. But yeah, anyway, I don't believe in that. I've never been one who likes seeing a guy. Because you know, and I think we both know this one. I know a number of guys that do that shit. They make women feel like that woman is his girlfriend or someone special when they know they just want to tap that ass for about 3, 4, 5 months.
Right.
If not less. And
then they tap another asses.
So I don't do that shit. So that's why I say, yeah, if you get bad karma from that, you deserve it. Now, if you remember though, in Fatal Attraction,
but
Michael Douglas told Glenn Close
right.
that he was married. He told her he just wanted a fling. And she was just a crazy bitch.
But okay, if we're talking about karma, he was married. And he was cheating on his wife.
Well, yeah,
so that's,
you're right.
That's another attraction of bad karma.
Well, yeah, you can argue that. That's true, yeah.
And if you don't get to know someone before you sleep with them, you haven't seen if they're crazy or not. So he met her. They had a drink at a bar. They went back. And I think if he had spent a couple of days with her, he probably could have figured out she was crazy before.
Yeah, there's ways. I've talked about it on the show. Here's one of my clues. If men, when you listen to this episode, here's how the first sign: overreaction to something really trivial. I swear to God, that's been my probably my more than any other predictor. My no, like say for example, I'll give you an example. This woman stalked me one time in Bloomington, Indiana. Stalked me. She was probably the closest thing I've had in real life to Glenn Close's character. And in retrospect, what should have been my first sign, even though it wasn't at the time, because I ignored it, just like you was talking about how ignoring red flags.
Mm-hmm.
I was supposed to meet her one evening in the computer center. Because how we met was I was her tutor. I was her economics tutor. And something came up that I wasn't able to make it. Now, most women in that situation would be like, oh, Alan, you know, sorry I missed you. I guess something came up. Okay, you know, give me a call. We'll reschedule or whatever. This woman called me and left me a message, and she was damn near crying. She was like,
Red.
Why would you treat me like that? You're treating me less than human. And my brother said it then, but he kind of said it jokingly, but it ended up being a joke. He said, at that moment, when I let him listen to the message, he said, dude, he said,
crazy.
That bitch sound crazy. And we kind of laughed, you know. But sure enough, over the next few months, that woman made my life a living fucking hell. And anyway, but yeah. So, yeah, anytime somebody just goes off the deep end because, like, say you drank the last soda and they, like, start pointing a gun at you, you're like, that's me. You're like, okay, all the marbles ain't working. But, oh, the thing I was going to take some jazz at, well, yeah, I was familiar with Gina, and, of course, Yanni, she's been on my show twice. You guys had one episode called How to Train a Bad Boy.
Right.
What the fuck? Who came up with that idea?
Actually, that was Zandra's episode and her topic, and the original topic is how to train a dog. And some of the ladies didn't like that characterization, so they toned it down to how to train a bad boy.
Yeah, well, that's another episode, but I just say simply, that's oxymoronic. You cannot. That's the reason why a man earns the title bad boy is because he can't be controlled, influenced, let alone trained.
But that won't stop us from trying.
Yeah, trust me. I know. I know. I've seen a lot of women try. I've seen a lot of women fail. But yeah, women definitely will try. And it's just, yeah, anyway, but I will say this, I have truly enjoyed having you as a guest on my show. You made me go over 3 hours.
Woo!
And I don't know if that's ever happened. I think that's only happened once, no more than twice since I've been on air where I'm going over 3 hours.
Well,
usually most I go is 2.5 hours. But damn, we did some serious extended play So, again, I give myself 62.8% of the credit, and you, you know, 37.8% of the credit goes to Deanna. But, no, it's been a wonderful conversation. I wish you nothing but continued success with your book.
Thank you.
All your future endeavors, even though I got beef with you because you went to Northwestern, and when I went to my homecoming, Northwestern beat the shit out of IU. They, like, scoring all kinds of points on their ass. But, yeah,
well, look, I wanted to say thank you so much for having me on. I thoroughly enjoy myself. You're such a great host. You do such great research. You have such great questions. And I can't wait. I have to get your book and read it. I can't wait.
Ooh, okay.
And I wish you the same continued success with all of your books. So.
Now, just the way this evening has been, you just got to give me a third mode one.
Say it again.
Say it again.
Mode one.
Alan Roger Curry.
Get up front, straightforward.
Alan Roger Curry.
Mo one.
That's going to do it for tonight, ladies and gentlemen. Join me for my last two episodes of the 2011 calendar year. Next week I will have a gentleman by the name of Corey Jenkins. Corey Jenkins, he's the host of a show called The Mailroom TV. We're going to talk about men's egos versus women's emotions. Men's egos versus women's emotions. And then 2 weeks from tonight, I'm going to be talking about probably my favorite subject next to just fucking itself, and that's erotic dirty talk about fucking. Yes, we're going to be talking about erotic dirty talk. Who loves it? Who hates it? Who's indifferent towards it? And I'll also be using pretty much half that show just to plug my next book, my third paperback, which is called Ooh, Say It Again, Mastering the Fine Art of Verbal Seduction and Oral Sex. That's not O-R-A-L, that's A-U-R-A-L. Till then, have a safe, enjoyable weekend. Thank you so much. Take care.